This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. It's time for Place to Be Nation's Year in Pop. Each episode, we go back in time to a year in the past and take a trip down memory lane and see what was going on in the worlds of news, sports, and pop culture with your hosts, Andy Atherton and Scott Criscolo.
Place to Be Nation, the Year in Pop is back. Here on the PlayStation Pop Feed, I am Andy. I'm one of your co-hosts. Thank you for joining us tonight. Tonight we're looking at another great year. We're getting close, though, to ending our favorite decade, the 1980s. But let's talk about that with the crew tonight. Let me get in my co-host here. He is the PTBN Podfather, heard on many, many great shows across various feeds, especially the PTBN Wrestling Network, Mr. Scott Criscolo. Scott, how are you?
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, Mr. Atherton, and to the rest of those out there here on the PTB Pop Experience. You know, I gave you that name. Can you start, like, using it?
When I gave name,
Experience. Nobody likes the word feed. We hate kayfabe terms. Anyway, but the Pop Experience is great. Andy, you do an awesome job, and this is an awesome show. And as we're getting out of the piece of shit year that we're in, or we're in, I'm not sure when you're posting this, but... tonight, we're going to talk about probably one of my favorite years of my life that I ever lived, if the 40-something that I have. Yeah, this is a great year. I was graduating from grammar school, going into high school, so that summer was a ton of fun. And a lot of great stuff happened in all of our great categories tonight. But why don't I bring in the help us bring in the rest of our quartet? This gentleman, I'm going to swerve it for you. I'm going to swerve you, Andy. This gentleman is not only on this wonderful program, you can also hear him over on the No-So feed, on the ECW Extreme Three-Way Dance, and on This Week in the NFL, during the season, and then it's This Week in Sports in the offseason, and one of the most unusual NFL seasons ever, because a team from our division is going to make the playoffs with a losing record. How juicy. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. J. Arsenio D'Amato. Good evening, John.
All right, boys. Great to be on. We were contemplating going on strike, but instead we're gonna cross the picket line and we're gonna plow through. Unlike the boys in 1987, which we'll get to later.
<That's right. laughs> we left me with three scab co-hosts. Is that what you guys are gonna do?
Let's see who we have had. Let's see, Ryan Schmuck and that's all right. There's more than enough scabs. Andy, why don't you conclude the quartet?
This gentleman.
How annoying.
I know. so annoying. God. Anyway, they were never there at MSG on this date. Anyway, this gentleman, you can hear him on basically any show that has NWA in the title. NWA Saturday Special, NWA Crock Roll, The Doctor, Dr. G. George Ribolino. How are you tonight, my friend?
Good. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. And if I knew that people could go on strikes, I could get some more money in this thing. I think I'll go on strike then.
You could be one of those guys that sits in like a lounge chair on the. You could be one of those guys that sits on a lounge chair on the fence.
Come on, Podfather. Come on. I want a better salary here. This is getting ridiculous over here. A few more dollars in the paycheck. Cool. Why not?
Well, I did, I did get a hefty settlement from the split in the ivory tower. So I might be some bonuses for those in the new year. We'll see. Anyway, as Andy mentioned tonight here on the Year in Pop, Johnny mentioned the year 1987, which, as I mentioned earlier, was one of my favorite years of my life. I graduated from grammar school or middle school for some of you out there.
Would you get laid in 1987? Man, I've never heard you talk about 1987 so much.
I love 1987.
I thought the Mets won the World Series in 86. I thought that was the best year
great,
of your life.
I had a great summer of Spin the Bottle. I will tell you that. I batted about 820 on Spin the Bottle, so don't worry about that. 7 minutes in heaven? Hey, it was more like 21 minutes in heaven. Oh no. So we're going to talk about all sorts of great things tonight. Of course, these gentlemen have a Super Bowl to talk about tonight and great albums. Was 87 a good year for movies? I'm looking forward to that discussion, Andy, because 87 was kind of a up and down year for movies, if I remember correctly. So we'll talk about
a surprise of what the movie number one movie at the box office was that year. Probably not one you'd probably guess.
No, exactly. Good albums in 87. Mm-hmm. We started to get a little taste of a little hip hop, R&B, rap stuff in 87. Of course, we saw the burgeoning growth of hair metal and et cetera. So a lot to talk about. But Andy, why don't you get us started? How are we living as humans, as human beings in 1987?
Well, we were actually, interacting with human beings in 1987, unlike right now. The average cost of a new house was $92,000. That was up about $3,000 from 1986. Your average income per year was $24,350. That's up about $1,000 from the previous year. Your average rent, $395, increase of $10. Your average cost of a new car was about $10,305. That went up about $1,000. The gallon of gas stayed steady at 89 cents. The inflation rate stayed steady at 1.91%. And your cost of a first-class postage stamp went up to 24 cents from 22. What the kids were playing with back then, the popular toys were Captain Power vehicles. You got the Dozy doll, the Fun Witch Factory, G.I. Joe figures, which were a personal favorite of mine. I kick myself every day that I never held on to them because I had quite the collection. Jammy Pie dolls, Lady Lovely Locks, Mattel Brave Star figures, Mr. Game Show, a pogo ball. That those first came out. Those were those round things with the ball in the middle that you always fell on. Pound Puppies. Silverhawks, Super Turbo Electro Train, then Talking Alf, the storytelling alien. At the arcade, a big year for video games. At the arcade. Now, this game is very renowned. Actually has a podcast named, not a podcast, a YouTube show named after it. One of the cheat codes for when it made its way to the home version, but Contra. Contra is a was popular in the arcade, but really, really didn't become the mega hit until it hit the Nintendo Entertainment System. Of course, it was a very difficult game to play. It was two of you, hopefully, and then you had to basically like storm an island complex, fortress, whatever. But that was where the famous up, up, down, down, left, right, A, B, A, B, start, select, start, I believe, cheat code started. Which Xavier Woods named his YouTube channel with his famous, his very popular video game show. Double Dragon, one of my personal favorite games. It was it was like a karate slash, you had the boss had like a gun and you're one of the two guys that beat people up. The first incarnation of Street Fighter, it was okay. It was kind of basic, really didn't hit until Street Fighter 2 comes out a year or two later. Then you had Dragon Sprint, Blazer, Pac-Mania. The Pac-Man franchise was still hanging on. Galaga had a revamp in 88. You had some driving games. We had Final Lap. We had Road Blasters, which, was one of the first games to add shooting to it. You had Spy Hunter, but this really kind of just made all about the shooting. Zybots, you had APB, which you were a police officer. And one of my favorites that is under the radar, Super Dodgeball. You guys ever play Super Dodgeball?
Is that arcade?
Yeah, in the arcade, yeah.
No, I don't remember that game.
You got to choose different like body types. Like you have big guys, little guys, and they all had different attributes. Some could catch well, and if you threw a ball a certain way at your opponent and you hit them hard enough, they would fall to the ground and like their spirit would rise out of them. Like an angel, like you killed them. It was very fun. In the consoles at home, we had on the NES, we had Zelda 2, Legend of Link, Castlevania 2, Simon's Quest, and now, here we go, Mike Tyson's Punch-Out.
Finally. Yes. Love that game.
I was actually the first of my friends to beat Mike Tyson. but I beat him on points. I beat him on points.
God, I was, you.
Wait,
you pussy.
I went back and knocked him out though. I did.
I knocked him out at 3 o'clock in the morning in a blizzard in my friend's basement. But oh my god, that game was so amazing.
A win is a win, whether it's on points or knockouts.
Oh gee.
It did go back. Gotta be honest though, you know, once you got past the first minute and a half, Tyson was very beatable. I always thought Mr. Sandman was probably the toughest guy because he just nailed you with those uppercuts throughout.
Yeah, the toughest guy for me, I agree with you, because the first 90 seconds were all uppercuts and one uppercut and it was over. So mm-hmm. if you could dodge the first 90 seconds of uppercuts, then it was just a war of attrition, really. Honestly, you know what the toughest one for me was? The second Bald Bull.
Ah.
The second Bald Bull was a bitch. He was one tough son of a bitch, the second Bald Bull. Obviously, you had Glass Joe, Piston Honda, Von Kaiser.
Campo.
who was the Indian guy?
Glass Tiger.
Or something Tiger.
Yeah.
Then you had, of course, Bald Bull, Soda Popinski. You had Bald Bull twice.
Yeah, and
Piston somebody Honda. Came back early. I think Piston Honda came back Piston even Honda faster.
Twice.
King Hippo. King, yeah, you can only hit him in the stomach.
Don Flamenco.
Super Macho Man, who would end up being in the Tyson slot when the contract ran out.
Yeah.
They moved Super Macho Man to the last fight. And then beating Super Macho Man, and then you got Tyson. Mm-hmm. But I played that game at my buddy's house for a year and a half. And they used to just sit back and, you know, we would just sit back and watch me do it. And then one Friday night at like 2:45 in the morning on a cold, I think it was 87. It might've been 88, but, you know, in Orange, Connecticut, I finally knocked him out in the third round, after like 50 straight losses or something. But what a game. I mean, that goes, if there's ever a Mount Rushmore of Nintendo games, that's on my list.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. No doubt about it. No doubt about it.
Gee, you play Mike Tyson's Punch-Out?
I played it a few times. I was not a big video game guy, I got to admit. I mean, I was into Atari when Atari was out. But I do remember everybody, the whole big thing was who's going to beat Mike Tyson. I had a friend that was like obsessed like Scott was with it. Just... he would stay up to all hours of the night to try to beat Mike Tyson.
Yeah. Yeah, it was hard because, I mean, literally, he hit you once, you fell down in the first
minute.
Didn't they
have an arcade one of it, too?
They had it, but he wasn't the sponsor.
Yeah, the Punch-Out. Oh. Yeah, you're right, G. The Punch-Out in the arcade was a generic. Yeah.
But it had the...
I do remember it in the arcade. I remember playing a bunch of times the Punch-Out in the arcade.
Yeah, and you put your hands in the handles and you used to actually punch.
Yeah.
Some of them, like Glass Joe, I'm trying to remember, Bald Bull, they were in the arcade game. Then they had a second one, Super Punch-Out came out. I don't remember a lot of the... I remember Bear Hugger was one of the first hard ones. Basically, it's like fighting Earthquake or something like that. or Loch Ness or something. I remember that. It was fun. Then they had Mega Man, which is not, I didn't get into that at all, really. I know it has a legacy, though. I know my son has the Amiibo for that. Double Dribble, which is one of the first. It was fun. It was one of the, probably the first really good basketball game we got.
Yep. You know, shooting threes on the wing. I used to shoot threes on the wing like crazy.
And then another game on the Nintendo, though, Pro Wrestling. Mm-hmm. That was fun.
Yeah, the original.
The original.
Oh, my God. How grizzled.
Yes.
It was.
Yeah, you had the one guy that looked like the creature from the Black Lagoon, right?
Yeah.
And he would bite people. Yeah, it was a lot of basic moves. I think I downloaded it on the Switch. I played it like once or twice. It just wasn't the same for me. Right. And we had on the Sega Master System, Phantasy Star came out. On the PC, we had Leisure Suit Larry in the Land of Lounge Lizards, one of the first kind of, I don't know, naughty games,
porn
so to speak.
Games? Yeah. Yeah, it's a porn game. I remember it. My buddy had it for the Commodore 64. Mm-hmm. And we played that at night when the parents went to bed. We didn't play that at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So
No. You had to go and make deals, so to speak, amongst other things. You had Sid Meier's Pirates. Sid Meier became very big in the kind of tycoon type games where you would be world building, so to speak. Fourth and Inches, which was the baseball version of Hardball.
On the Commodore. I thought that was a porn game too.
Johnny wanted to buy some video. Who is Larry?
We had California Games, which was part of the whole Epics, the video game company. They were the ones that put out the Olympic ones, and then they ran out of Olympic events, so they started coming out with World Games and California Games, so you got to surf and other stuff like that. Ghostbusters, based on the movie. Hat Trick, which was a very fun, very kind of simple. It was like a 3-on-3 hockey game. You had Maniac Mansion, Test Drive, which was a ton of fun. Where in the USA is Carmen Sandiego, which was the sequel to Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego. So yeah, lots of fun video games and PC and all that came out. So on to pop culture, we'll dive into this a little bit more once we get to television. But the first Simpsons cartoon short is shown on the Tracy Ullman Show that April. The series aired on the newly launched Fox television network, and a total of 48 Simpsons shorts were shown before they returned to their own series in 1989. The cartoon was created by Matt Groening and produced by James L. Brooks. The characters were originally voiced by the actors on the Tracy Ullman Show, who would go on to continue voicing them for the full-length series. The premise focused on the antics of the dysfunctional Simpsons family of Homer, Marge, Bart, Lisa, and Maggie, and Lucy, based on Groening's old family. Do you guys remember the original Simpsons shorts?
Yeah, I mean, I did. I mean, their heads were funny looking. Like, they were definitely a little stranger looking than they would end up being when the show started. But yeah, I mean, I didn't watch her per se, so I didn't watch a ton of them, but I do remember the drawing was much more, was much rougher.
Yes.
It was shorts. Beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was a big Tracy Ullman fan, so I love the show. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, this little card, let's just throw this little cartoon on this brand new show, fledgling network, and Dan Castellaneta, and Yeardley Smith and, Julie Kavner all got these jobs that have basically lasted them. Still, to this day, they're still voicing these characters because it's still running. It's amazing. Incredible. So, but this was a big deal. The Fox Broadcasting Company making its primetime TV debut that year. We got our fourth major channel. And that gave us, again, shows we'll dive into a little bit more later, like Married with Children, 21 Jump Street. There were a lot of hits and misses, too, though, on Fox. They basically were giving shows to anybody and anybody. When Friends launched, I like to call it, they were mostly Fox rejects, because I think all of them except for Courtney Cox and Lisa Kudrow had failed Fox shows before they hit it over on Friends. On March 24th of that year, Michael Eisner, the CEO of the Walt Disney Company and French Prime Minister and future president of France, Jacques Chirac, signed the agreement to construct the 4,800-acre Euro Disney Resort, now called Disneyland Paris, and to develop it in the town of Marne-la-Vallée in Paris, France. The first Starbucks store opens outside Seattle, outside of the city of Seattle, are open in Vancouver and Chicago. Now, there are a lot of big deaths. This is probably when we started losing a lot more of the, I like to call them the golden age of Hollywood stars, but and also personalities. Liberace, the great singer, basically more like an act. He was Andy Warhol, the artist, James Coco, the very good actor, Danny Kaye, another funny guy, Robert Preston, who was still working and doing things like Victor Victoria up to then, Maria Von Trapp, one of the original, one of the Von Trapp sisters, Dick Shawn, Rita Hayworth, Geraldine Page, Fred Astaire. That was huge, losing the great. This one really hit home because my dad was a huge fan of the Honeymooners and of the and Smokey and the Bandit, and that was the great Jackie Gleason.
I remember that.
Jay, good, big Jackie Gleason fan.
Huge, come on. You hit it just like your dad. The Honeymooners and Smokey and the Bandit. Come on. Can't get much better than that. And still quotable to this day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was too funny. I mean, I still remember the post of, it was the Daily News. It was the front page, you know, how sweet it was. It had a picture of him and he lived the life the way he wanted to live it. He smoked, he drank. He's just like, I'm, this is who I am. And you know, if it costs me some years, it costs me some years. I mean, he was hysterical. I mean, every time Smokey and the Bandit is on, I have to sit and watch for a few minutes. And just the delivery of the lines. Hey, Daddy, look, an alligator. Oh, that reminds me. I got to go call your mama.
Daddy, I lost my hat. Hope your goddamn head was in it. My mother still calls me a tick turd. So, it's obviously the Honeymooners for all of us here in the Northeast. Johnny, what is it, New Year's Eve on Channel 11 or New Year's Day on Channel 11?
Yes, sir.
They play the marathon. And you know what underrated movie he was in? And I always liked him in it. The Toy.
Oh,
loved
that's hard to find these days.
I know. Great movie, The Toy. Yeah, I know. It's because it's apparently offensive. Well, Richard Pryor did it, so he obviously didn't think it was offensive. But a tremendous movie. But yeah, to me, he's Ralph Cramden and he's Sheriff Buford T. Justice.
Well, The Honeymooners was only one season. That's the amazing part of it, but it's so iconic.
I know,
it was like, 39 episodes or something like that? Yeah. And then they had the Lost episodes.
Yeah. Now, gee,
I love that show. I mean,
he owned a ton of stuff in your neck of the woods.
Yeah, he owned a lot of land down in Florida, like the Everglades, I guess, or whatever, in those areas. And he sold a lot of that land, which became towns. He had a house, I think it was in Inverary, which is like a section of outside of Fort Lauderdale. And he had a pretty big house there. And he donated his library, I guess he was a big reader, to University of Miami. He had like this gigantic library in his house of, thousands of books.
I know he had a theater down there too, the Jackie Gleason Theaters. I don't know if it's still around or not.
Yep, yeah. Yeah, he definitely owned it. I mean, that's where he made his money. He bought a lot of land down in Florida, and then everybody was starting to move down there, and he was able to sell, in Florida, where west of Fort Lauderdale, where I grew up, those towns were all new towns, new cities. It used to be just Everglades, empty land, and so then they constructed that land down there, and made all these new towns and new cities. I mean, when I go home now. When I left to come up here to school in the early 90s, there was 1 million people in Broward County. Now there's over 2 million people. So it blew up. And, Jackie Gleason owned a lot of that land. I mean, I think before he died, I think he sold most of it. But, I have a lot of memories. I mean, the Honeymooners were always on in syndication in our local syndication channels down in Florida. So I always put that on. It was always on at night. I always watched TV before I went, while I was going to sleep, and that show was always on. And I still can't believe it was only 39 episodes. That's the amazing part.
Yeah, I knew it was late when I was like up and I was like half awake out here, and I fell asleep with the TV on. I'd hear the Honeymooners theme. I'm like, oh boy, it's kind of late. I'm gonna barbecue your ass and molasses. Love that line. all right. Clara Peller, who, came to fame with the Where's the Beef Lady.
WrestleMania 2.
WrestleMania 2. That's right. She was, what was she, the timekeeper in Los Angeles?
She didn't know where she was. She had no idea where she was.
the great director, John Huston, passed away. Lee Marvin, one of the great tough guy actors of all time. And, always remember him. His mention in the Jane, You Ignorant Slut thing on Weekend Update, because it was all about his ex-wife, Michelle Triola. Lorne Greene, of famous actor. Dan Rowan, one half of Rowan and Martin's Laughing. Mary Astor and Bob Fosse. We all lost them all that year. Notable births in the actors and actresses. We got Blake Lively, Zac Efron, Michael B. Jordan, Evan Rachel Wood, Karen Gilliam, Miles Teller, Brooklyn Decker. Also, The World Got Snooky in 1987. In music, we Kendrick Lamar, Wiz Khalifa, Kevin Jonas, and Kesha all came into the world. In sports, Andy Murray, Lionel Messi, Tim Tebow, Maria Sharapova, and Sidney Crosby. And in the world of wrestling, this is quite the list here. Ronda Rousey, Bray Wyatt, Becky Lynch, AJ Lee, Kelly Kelly, Kyle O'Reilly, Johnny Gargano, Carmella, Charlie Caruso, Dash Wilder, Sammy Callahan, and Walt, all born in 1987.
A lot of hot people between the female wrestlers and the actresses, and
yeah,
even the male actors. A lot of good looking people that year. You got Zac Efron, Michael B. Jordan, a lot of studs, a lot of sex in that year. Yeah,
it must have been something in the water back in the 86 and 87. You know what I'm saying? With that, that's going to bring us close to pop culture section and on to sports with Scott Criscolo. Take it away.
Thank you, Mr. Atherton. Rest in peace, Jackie Gleason, and everybody else there. Claire Peller. Mm-hmm. I think she was timekeeper. You're right. Let's hope she was a ring announcer because she was throwing the mic all over the place and not even talking into it. So. she's yelling, "Where's the who was better, him or her or Herb from Burger King?" I don't remember why the hell Herb was in Burger King commercials, but anyway. Let's go to baseball for 1987. Your Hall of Fame class, only two guys. Former Oakland A and New York Yankee right-hander Catfish Hunter and former Chicago Cubs outfielder Billy Williams went into the Hall of Fame. The Veterans Committee put in Ray Dandridge. The individual awards, your MVP, your American League MVP, one-hit wonder himself, George Bell of the Toronto Blue Jays, who hit 40 home runs and then vanished off the face of the earth. Well, not really, but this was like pretty much his big year, and that was pretty much the end of that. The NL MVP was a big deal because this guy signed as a free agent in the offseason with this team, and then he put up killer numbers for a team that lost like 95 games. Andre Dawson, the Hawk, left the Montreal Expos after 1986, signed with the Chicago Cubs, hit 49 homers, drove in 137 runs. He was a beast, but the Cubs went like 65 and 90 something, and didn't matter much. So I don't understand how you're in it. I always wondered how you could be an MVP for a team that lost 90. What would they have been without you? Lost 115 games? So anyway, your AL Cy Young Award winner, Roger Clemens, back-to-back years, second straight year for him. And in the closest Cy Young Award race in history, Steve Bedrosian, an alumnus of the doctors in my beloved University of New Haven, edged out Rick Sutcliffe, 57-55, the closest award in history. Bedrock saved 40 games for the Phillies, 87. Your A Rookie of the Year, first base slugger for the Oakland A's, Mark McGwire, who hit 49 home runs that year. Yeah, I wonder how he did that. And then your National League Rookie of the Year, who had a 34-game hitting streak that year with the San Diego Padres, Benito Santiago. Your division winners, the Tigers won the AL East, Twins won the West, St. Louis, another pennant race battle with the Mets in 87. Sadly, Johnny, I will never forget the Friday night Terry Pendleton home run that pretty much sunk us from winning back-to-back division titles. But
yeah, Roger McDowell threw a good slide. Pendleton went down and got it. Yep.
He did. He did. Of course, we made some changes that year. There was a few trades. Kevin Mitchell left and went to the Padres because Frank Cashin was scared of him or something. We did get Kevin McReynolds, who wasn't a bad outfielder, but he didn't have that savoir-faire that our team needed.
Not a clutch player.
No, not at all.
He don't like New York. He wasn't built for New York.
No, he really wasn't. He really wasn't. Doc had a good year.
What?
Doc had a good half year, I should say.
He had a
good off season. He was stuck in a crack house the week of the he didn't make the parade because he was fucking high. But I remember he came back the night I graduated from grammar school, and he beat the Pirates and he ended up winning 15 games that year. So he did the best he could, but he would have a better year in 88. Anyway, and the Giants, who I had never seen win anything in my lifetime, I think won their first division title since Willie Mays, probably. The Tigers, of course, made a big trade at the end of the year to try and catch the Blue Jays, making a trade with the Atlanta Braves. The Tigers would get veteran right-hander Doyle Alexander, who would help, of course, the Tigers in the home stretch win the division. Among the chips that the Braves got was a very little known right-handed pitcher by the name of
John Smoltz.
John Smoltz. We'll see. We'll hear his name again in future episodes. But didn't matter because the Twins beat the Tigers in the ALCS and in the Cardinals beat the Giants in the NLCS, even though Jeffrey Leonard had a hell of a postseason. I think he hit like 5 home runs in that series. But Cardinals won anyway. And in the first of 2 times that they would do this, the Minnesota Twins would win their first world championship, beating the Cardinals in 7, with every game being won by the home team. Frank Viola, future Met, would be the World Series MVP. And, of course, your managers were Tom Kelly and the white rat, Whitey Herzog. Some other notes from 1987. Speaking of drugs, Lamar Hoyt, barred for life. His 3rd arrest on possession charges, this time on the U.S.-Mexico border. He was sentenced to 45 days in prison, but he would never go back to baseball. At the beginning of the season, Johnny, a trade would be done between the Mets and the Royals. The Royals would get Rick Anderson, Ed Hearn, and Mauro Guzgazo in exchange for
David Cohn.
David Cohn and Chris Jelic. So, and Coney had I think you remember having a pretty good year in 87. April 6th, if anybody remembers this, it makes your skin crawl. Al Campanis, general manager of the Dodgers and a former teammate of Jackie Robinson, appears on Nightline to discuss the progress of racial integration in baseball as the 40th anniversary of Robinson's first game approached. When asked by Nightline host Ted Koppel why more African-Americans do not become managers or executives, Campanis said, quote, "Blacks lack certain qualities for those jobs." Ted Koppel, of course, did his ass-tightening goofy face, and the Dodgers fired Campanis 2 days later. Mike Schmidt, on April 17th, at his 500th career home run, Michael Jack Schmidt, against the Pirates. The Mariners had the number 1 overall pick in the 87 draft, and who did they draft?
Griffey Jr.
Ken Griffey Jr.
One of the sweetest swings I've ever seen.
Yeah, he had an amazing swing.
Oh, I love that swing.
With their starting rotation decimated by injuries, the Mets seeked help from Tom Seaver, who was not offered a contract following the 86 season. His salary was $1 million. The Red Sox offered him $500,000, which he also declined. Seaver joined the Red Sox on June 6th, got hit hard, and then retired. Tom Terrific, the franchise. Don Baylor on June 28th was hit by a pitch for the 244th time, a modern-day record which has since been broken by Craig Biggio. Of course, Doctor, your boy Don Mattingly, 8 straight games with a home run. He set that record on July 18th in a win over the Texas Rangers. Paul Molitor had a 39-game hitting streak that year. And on September 14th, while the Orioles were losing 18-3 to the Blue Jays, Cal Ripken was lifted from the game, snapping his streak of 8,243 consecutive innings. Oof. And after a disappointing 4th place finish, Yankees owner George Steinbrenner decides to promote Lou Piniella to general manager. And who does George hire, Dr. G, for the 5th time?
Billy Martin.
Right out of the bar. Burp. was he across the street?
Bring back Billy anytime.
Was he across the street at Stan's?
That's where he lived. When he got fired, then when George needed him, you know where to find him.
Exactly. So there you go. So there's the 1987 season of baseball. The Minnesota Twins won their first world championship. In the 86-87 college basketball season, the Indiana Hoosiers. Yes, the Keith Smart jumper at the Superdome against Syracuse won the national championship. Bobby Knight's 3rd. They beat Syracuse by a point. The other teams that made it to the Final Four that year, UNLV and the Friars of Providence. Yes, they beat Georgetown in the Southeast Regional Final and then lost to Syracuse in the Final Four.
Ricky Pitino.
Ricky Pitino, yes, sir.
And future Ghouls, future Ghouls, Ghouls coach.
Yes.
Future Ghouls coach. Right. Future collector of whoas. to get those players for the Ghouls. the NBA draft, the number one overall pick, of course, the Admiral David Robinson, who played at Navy by the Spurs. Of course, he would have to wait a little bit because David Robinson was very firm. He did his duty as a naval officer and then joined the Spurs. The fifth pick in the draft by Seattle was this little known dude from Central Arkansas by the name of Scottie Pippen, who would then get traded to the Bulls. Speaking of the Bulls, Horace Grant would go 10th. Reggie Miller went 11th. Johnny, with the 18th pick in the draft, the New York Knicks selected
Mark Jackson from St. John's.
Yes, I love Mark Jackson. What a great player. That guy just, for me, Johnny, that guy just epitomized St. John's basketball, besides Mullen, obviously. I love Mark Jackson. What a player. What a player. Reggie Lewis went 22nd to the Celtics, and Sarunas Marcellonis was drafted by the Warriors from the Soviet Union. The Hall of Fame class that year, Rick Barry, Bob Hubriggs, Pistol Pete, Bobby Wanzer, and yes, Johnny, Clyde himself, Walt Frazier. Love Clyde. In the 86-87 season, Magic Johnson was the MVP, and in the finals, the Lakers avenged their 80, or I shouldn't say avenged it, for the second time in 3 years, the Lakers would beat the Celtics 4-2 to win the NBA title. When Michael Thompson joined the Lakers in midseason, alongside Kareem, Magic, and Worthy, the Lakers became the first team to ever have 4 number one draft picks on the same team. However, the big year, the big thing that happened in 87 was the retirement tour of Dr. G's first favorite player. That's where his nickname comes from, the Doctor. Dr. J, Julius Erving, retired at the end of that season. The Nets retired his number 32. And, of course, Erving became the first player to ever have his number retired by a team while still an active player. I'm pretty sure the Sixers retired his number 6. I'm almost certain.
Yes, they did.
Yeah. Dr. G, you have a Nets. Do you have a Nets one or do you have a Sixers one?
No, a Nets.
You have a Nets
New York one. Nets.
Yes. Johnny, he was drilling J's at the old mausoleum.
Nassau Coliseum, yes.
Yep. Did people care about the Nets, Johnny? Do you remember, like, when they played at Nassau? Do you remember that at all?
Yes,
or no?
Definitely. One of the championships, they stormed the court. And they had to play, like, the last few – they had to clear the court. It was a big mess. They had to play the last few seconds during one of those titles, yeah.
Yep.
No, definitely. Their attendance was up there for. It was a shame the ABA couldn't make it together because they were definitely hot for a few years.
They absolutely were. Absolutely were. So there's your NBA. The National Football League. Let's not wait. We'll talk about this first. January 25th, 1987, Super Bowl 21. At the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, the AFC champion Denver Broncos, who beat the Cleveland Browns in the AFC championship at the Dog Pound, thanks to the drive, taking on the NFC champion New York Football Giants, who won the NFC championship with 197 mile per hour winds, beating the Washington Football Team of the Universe. Ah, fuck it. They're the Redskins. They were the Redskins in 87. The final was 17-0. Gentlemen, Denver led 10-9 at the half. Dr. G, what were you feeling at halftime? Do you remember?
That was only 1 point. I felt good. I really did.
Johnny, you too?
Giants always played close games. I mean, yeah. I mean, in the beginning of the season, that season, they, did blow out some teams, but we were used to that. I really wasn't nervous for that game. I do remember, and I don't know if I've said this on other podcasts and stuff like that, that I just remember it growing up in Florida. You felt like you were in New York because there were so many New Yorkers down there. I remember people spray painting sheets and hanging it up on their walls, New York Giant. I mean, it was insane. And not too far from Dolphins country, but it was all Big Blue because people were so excited because the Giants hadn't been good for so many, they started becoming good, but I mean, they hadn't won anything in such a long time that people were so excited and people were really like rallying around it. And, you knew who the New Yorkers were in the neighborhood, that's for sure, which was probably 80% in the neighborhood that I lived in. And it was it was the best football moments, you know, as a fan that I've had was that year, because the Giants really were bad for so long and they just started becoming good in the last few years, you know, before this. And I just have such great memories of it. And I just I remember, you know, having we went over to somebody's house for a big Super Bowl party. And, you know, all the adults getting drunk watching that, especially because everybody was rooting for the Giants. But I just have awesome memories of that Super Bowl. I could just, it's one of those that I could, you know, go back and watch the game again, just because mm-hmm. it just brings back great memories of finally winning something as a Giants fan. Yes. I'm sure John probably feels the same. And Andy.
Yeah, I was a little nervous.
How were you feeling, John, at halftime?
No, I was definitely a little nervous, because they were keeping it close, because the Giants didn't have to sweat. They destroyed the Niners in the one playoff, and the other one was an easy championship over Washington. I mean, they shut them out. The wind was like 150 miles that day. Washington, poor Jay Schrader, by the end of the game, they were putting smelling salts under his nose because he took so many shots.
No, you were right. They won the playoff games easily.
Yeah, destroyed the 49ers.
I knew when we got to the Super Bowl it was going to be tough, but to only be down 10-9, I wasn't really that worried. I mean, if it was the third quarter.
It was Elway. You feared Elway.
Yeah. Exactly. Because
I was at the playoff games because we had season tickets.
Oh wow!
And I remember Jerry Rice beginning the game. Jerry Rice wide open, running down, and then fumbled.
Yeah, the ball just fell.
And the ball literally rolled like a bowling ball, perfectly symmetrical. It rolled. It was crazy.
Yeah. Literally right in front of us. I mean, we were 37th rows up.
They would have took a 7-0 lead, and from there the Giants just rolled. I think was the final score like 41-3 or something.
49-3.
Wow.
What was it for the excitement for you guys growing up in New York? I mean, I'm talking about from the Florida perspective, so I could only imagine what it was like in New York.
No, people going out of their minds. This is their first one, but that's why, like I said, it was a little nervous because it was Elway at halftime, and it was. No, it was close. Anything could happen.
Yeah, but, for me,
but they came through in the second half. But also remember that year, there was a lot of talk of a Jets Giants Super Bowl because the Jets went 10-1 that year. Mm-hmm. They lost their last five games. They lost their last five games. And they finished 10-6. They still made the wild card. They won the wild card game versus Kansas City, and then that infamous game versus Cleveland where they blew the 10-point lead the last few minutes. They had the game wrapped up, of course. Gastineau roughing the passer, and then they lost to Cleveland in overtime. But
I was about to say that, G. Are you surprised?
But when they were 10-1, there was a lot of talk of it. There was a lot of talk about Jets Giants Super Bowl. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was great. I just love that Super Bowl.
Yeah, for me, it was about experiencing it with my dad, because he had season tickets since before I was born. And he sat through all the year. He followed them everywhere, you know, Yale Bowl,
years.
Yankees, everywhere. He was pissed when they went to the PSLs, let me tell you.
I could only imagine.
It was special. I mean, because, you know, growing it was something that I was just accustomed to. It was just part of my life was, you know, going to a handful of games every year. I mean, because he was younger then. He was going to a lot more games. I mean, he was only in his late 40s at this time. He's actually a year younger than I am now for the Super Bowl. And it was incredible. It was a team of destiny, in my opinion. You know, the Bears were the team of destiny the year before. And it was nerve-wracking, though, because you knew any given Sunday, anything could happen. Elway was just that good. But, yeah, that team was so special, that defense. You know, the Giants were never a big time passing team. You knew that. Sims was a smart quarterback, and you had Joe Morris. I mean, Bavaro just, you know, it would just carry people. But that linebacking core they did the 3-4. I mean, you know, you had Leonard Marshall, Jim Burt, just huge dudes. Then you had Carl Banks. It was Harry Carson. And I'm trying to remember Gary, what's his name?
Reasons.
Gary Reasons was the other linebacker. And then you had the heart and soul of the team, Phil McConkey. I mean, we exploded when he caught that touchdown off Bavaro's helmet. I mean, that was great. Yeah, it was just so much fun. And also, first time ever at the end of a Super Bowl or end of anything, you know, they asked Phil Simms, you win Super Bowl, what are you going to do now? I'm going to Disney World. First time ever. Him and Elway both were paid, but, you know, because they didn't know who's going to win the game. So right. That was the start of that, too.
That's right.
My dad cried. It was the second time in my life I ever saw my dad cry over sports. The first one was when we beat the Russians in 1980. But then I saw him cry again 7 years later when another New York team won their first championship in a zillion years. But Johnny knows what I'm talking about. We'll get there. But my dad loved Phil Simms because Phil Simms was my dad's kind of quarterback. He wasn't a guy that was going to throw for 500 yards. You know, my father, a little older than your guys' dads, but, you know, my dad grew up in the 50s, and he grew up with Charlie Connerly and Frank Gifford and you know, run the ball and hit the shit out of the other quarterback over and over again. And that's why he loved that 86 team, because that's exactly what they did. The offense might have been boring as fucking grass, but you scored your 20 points and you won the game because that defense was probably, I think, better than the 85 Bears, and I think it's because they weren't a gimmick. You know, yeah. Buddy Ryan had to invent some gimmick. That's my opinion. That front seven was violent. And you think about guys. I remember that season. I mentioned these two guys on our last episode when I was talking about the regular season. Neil Lomax and Ron Jaworski got the shit beat out of them in those two games each that they played against the Giants that year. I never forget. Neil Lomax,
what a shame.
I think one game, got hit like fucking 14 times for the Cardinals in the one game that they played against the Giants. And that playoff, I mean, I remember Jim Burt knocking Joe Montana like literally into next Christmas and leading to LT caught the pick and ran it like 50 yards for a touchdown. And literally they lifted up Joe and literally Joe had this look in his eyes like he thought he was at Disneyland. And then Johnny, as you said, remembers the NFC Championship where Jay Schrader got punched into submission in the midst of all the garbage and trash being flown all over the field. But the Giants outscored the Broncos 39-10 in the second half, 30-10 in the second half, won the Super Bowl 39-20. Phil Simms, 22 of 25, highest completion percentage in Super Bowl history. And at one point he completed his last, I think, 13 passes in a row. Phil was perfect on that day, as was the Giant defense. So the Giants won their first NFL championship since 1950-something, 56, 57, and their first Super Bowl championship. Mm-hmm. So Neil Diamond, by the way, sang the national anthem. They come into the Meadowlands. the Beach Boys did the halftime show, by the way. All right, we fast forward through the summer, the draft. The number one overall pick, future New York Jet, Vinny Testaverde, was picked by the Bucks from Miami. We'll talk about his last college game in a moment, though. Cornelius Bennett went to the Colts with the second pick. Of course, he would eventually go to Denver. Other guys drafted that year, Rod Woodson, picked 10th by the Steelers. Jim Harbaugh, picked 26th by the Bears. And in the with the 183rd pick, the Los Angeles Raiders selected Auburn running back Bo Jackson. And Mr. Atherton, I don't know if it's 88 or 89, but whenever we get to that video game segment where we talk about it's definitive, the greatest video game athlete of all time, about number 34 for the Raiders.
Tecmo Bo.
Yep, Tecmo Bo. The Hall of Fame class that...
I was just going to cheap plug the Mickey Mount Rushmore on sports video games. Check it out. We do talk about Tecmo Bowl on that one quite a bit as well.
I would certainly hope so. Your Hall of Fame, speaking of the Giants, he played with the Giants in the back end of his career. Larry Zonka, Lenny Dawson, Super Bowl MVP. Mean Joe Green, who, of course, won 4 rings. John Henry Johnson, Jim Longer, Don Maynard, speaking of the Jets. And the union president and former Raiders offensive lineman Gene Upshaw. Let's see. But Johnny mentioned there was a dark point of the season in 1987 another strike. This one was not as long as 1982. It only lasted 24 days, but they lost. Instead of losing games, they lost one game. But for the next 3 weeks, weeks 4, 5, and 6, they were played with replacement players, otherwise known as scabs. But unlike the 82 strike, a lot of players weren't really crazy about striking. So 15% of the union crossed, including Mark Gastineau, Johnny mentioned, the late hit. Randy White, defensive tackle for my Cowboys. For the fucking scumbags. Joe Montana, cross. Roger Craig, Doug Flutie, and Steve Largent, and et cetera, et cetera. So there we go. Let's see. Anything else going on here? Oh, big trade midseason. The Rams traded Eric Dickerson to the Colts. I was stunned when I saw that. Stunned. Yeah. There was actually the Bills were involved too, because that's where the Bills got Cornelius Bennett. They got the rights to that pick. Mm-hmm. ESPN became the first cable broadcaster of the league. That year they debuted ESPN Sunday Night NFL. Of course, Sunday Night Football, debuting on November 8th, 1987. And of course, now Sunday Night Football is on NBC. College football, Oklahoma was the preseason number one, but your national championship game, well, the bowl games in 87, Miami won the national championship. They beat Oklahoma. We'll talk more about the championship game of the 87 season in our 88 episode, because that's what I wanted to talk about was Miami-Penn State. But we'll talk about that in the 88 episode. Tim Brown, the last Notre Dame player to win the Heisman Trophy. Of course, he would end up going to play for the Raiders. In hockey, Edmonton Oilers won another cup. They beat the fucking scumbag Philadelphia Flyers 4-3. Let's see. On November 26th, 1986, Toronto's Borje Salming was accidentally cut in the face by a skate, requiring more than 200 stitches. It was the third injury to his face, and Salming returned to the play wearing a visor. On January 22nd, 1987, a massive blizzard resulted in only 334 spectators attending the game between the Devils and Flames at the Brendan Byrne Arena, leading to the Devils dubbing the spectators the 334 Club. And on April 4th, 1987, Johnny's favorite Islander, Dennis Potvin, became the first the first NFL defenseman to reach 1,000 points. I didn't hear the fucking scumbag Islanders. Your NHL Hall of Fame class, Jacques Lapierre. Speaking of the scumbag Flyers, one guy who was actually a class player for them, Bobby Clark. And Johnny, my dad's favorite Ranger of all time, the great
Eddie Jockman.
My dad told me, and I wasn't alive yet, but my dad said he cried when he got released and picked up by the Red Wings. Cried.
Yeah.
My dad loved Eddie Jockman. I don't know about your dad, Andy.
Yeah, he was a big Eddie Jockman guy.
Yeah, my dad loved Eddie Jockman.
His number hangs in the garden.
Yeah.
Yep.
I remember seeing the NHL All-Star game in 1994 right in the box right behind it, right by it.
Yep.
So, and it was weird. And coincidentally, they played the Red Wings the next day.
Yeah,
after they picked him up, and he was crying. And the crowd went bananas. They were shouting Eddie, and he was, had to pick off his mask because he was crying. He was bawling. He was overwhelmed.
Yeah, the when MSG did the top 50 moments in Madison Square Garden history, John Davidson told a story. He was a rookie, and he was on the bus, and he was looking around on the bus, and he goes, "Guys, where's Eddie?" And everybody looked at him like, "You don't know." And he's like, "What?" He goes, "He just got released." And and you're the starting goalie now. And John Davidson's like shitting his pants. Oh, by the way, he got picked up by the Red Wings when they're playing them. We're playing them tomorrow night at home. Yeah. And as John said, bawling his eyes out. The Rangers got booed when they scored goals. I mean, is that ridiculous? crazy. In golf that year, Larry Mize won the Masters on one of the coolest chip shots I've ever seen in a playoff. Four different players won the four majors that year. In tennis, Yvon Lendl won two of the four. He won the French and the U.S. Open. Let's see. Martina won another Wimbledon and won the U.S. Open. Al Unser Sr. won the Indy 500. Bill Elliott won Daytona. And the Dominator, Dale Earnhardt, won the NASCAR points won the NASCAR point championship. In boxing, one of my favorite fighters ever against one of my least favorite human beings ever fought on April 6th, 1987, Marvelous Marvin Hagler against that fucking scumbag, Sugar Ray Leonard. Sugar Ray Leonard did not wanted to kind of bob and weave and make up injuries for like 3 years because he didn't want to fight Marvin Hagler in his prime. So he waited 3 years, bobbed and weaved, did HBO stuff, you know, looked all pretty and sweet and did his little sweet voice. Then finally decided to come out of retirement, fight Marvin Hagler, and won the fight on points. Of course, the one guy who gave the rounds to Leonard said years later that he should have given two of the rounds to Hagler. A lot of help it does now. In any event, that was the one big fight in 1987. Well, so speaking of Mike Tyson, we'll get more into him in 1988 because he has some very historic fights in 1988. So there is sports in 1987, and the New York Football Giants are your world champions. Let's now move to the small screen, television in 1987. Mr. Atherton, the floor is yours.
Oh, thank you very much. So the top-rated television programs of the 1987-88 television season, Cosby Show is still on top. A Different World, a programming scheduling gimmick known as hammocking, is what led to this show being number two. I mean, it was a fine show, but you know, between Cosby and Cheers, you're going to get ratings because people are, you know, don't like to change the channel. And Cheers is number three. The Golden Girls were four. You had The Growing Pains, Who's the Boss, Night Court, 60 Minutes, Murray Shura, and Alf in your top 10, followed by The Wonder Years, Moonlighting, L.A. Law, Matlock, Amen, and Monday Night Football, rounding out your top 16. Some of the shows that ended in 1987, we lost the Gung Ho, which was based on the movie. Too Close for Comfort ends the great you know, Ted Knight show. He had already passed away, right, before the show ended, I believe.
Yeah, he did.
And they continued on with just the without him, I believe. The Love Boat.
Not long.
Not long. Yeah, it wasn't a much of a show without him. I mean, Jim J. Bullock
couldn't carry it.
No. The Love Boat does his final port of call that year. Also, Silver Spoons, a very 80s show. Berenstain Bears and the A-Team. Yeah, there's a lot of changing in the guard here. The Colbys, Fraggle Rock ends its run on HBO. Amazing Stories, which was a lot of fun for, you know, it was a Sunday night show, I believe, was a lead-in. Remington Steele comes to an end. Easy Street, Gimme a Break. The Tortellis, which was that Cheers spinoff that didn't last very long. Fame, the great drama Hill Street Blues, and Scarecrow and Mrs. King, as well as Airwolf. Coming in 1987, though.
On a side note, Andy, before you continue, I just want to pimp the Here on the Pop experience feed. Check out the 5-part series that Tech and I did on the legacy of James Bond, and you'll get more into the whole Remington Steele going off the air flim flam nonsense involving Pierce Brosnan. So a lot of more details on that on the Bond series that Tech and I did. Mm-hmm. Just wanted to pimp. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's okay. You could pimp away. Unsolved Mysteries starts that year, and I know that's actually just got rebooted again. That's a personal favorite of a couple of our good friends, Tim and Jenny. They love that stuff. Hard Copy, the you know, the magazine show. The Bold and the Beautiful starts in daytime. Max Headroom, a very now iconic 80s show. I mean, mm-hmm. It was kind of weird. I really could not get into it. I mean, the character was interesting. It was an interesting concept at the time, but not. And we mentioned this a little bit before, but Married with Children starts in 1987 as one of the original Fox programs. I love this show to the point where I used to yell at my mother on Sunday nights. She would call me during Married Children when I was going away to school. I'm like, do not call me at 9 o'clock on a Sunday. I am watching Married Children. I will gladly talk to you. I know you miss me and all that, but I will talk to you any other time, not during Married Children. Yeah. So good. It was the anti Cosby, you know, anti Roseanne, whatever you want to say. One of the greatest TV characters of all time, Al Bundy. I don't know if we talked about this already. Do you guys know who They originally wanted to be the married couple of the Bundys. You guys have any idea who the show was originally written for or pitched for?
No, I forget.
I don't.
It was Sam Kinison and Roseanne Barr.
Oh, wow.
That would have been something.
That would have been something.
Yeah, it wouldn't have lasted as long, though. I mean, Ed O'Neill is just a tremendous actor. I mean, he's great in all the stuff he's done ever since he played Al Bundy. We also mentioned the Tracy Ullman show, which I love. I was, you know, a big, you know, fan of sketch comedy. I always loved Tracy Ullman. Oh, she had, I was always a thing for her characters. 21 Jump Street, which gave us, you know, Johnny Depp and Richard Grieco, amongst others. The you know, the cop show that was about kids that, you know, young guys that still look like old enough to be in high school and go undercover. A romantic comedy duet, The Days and Nights of Molly Dodd. Good Morning, Miss Bliss premieres. And didn't do that well. It was based off of basically, you know, Haley Mills, former child actress, as now a grown up, you know, as a teacher. They retooled it and it moved to syndication, and some of the characters remained and became known as Saved by the Bell, which we will talk about a little bit later once that really gets up and running. Showtime at the Apollo, which, you know, follows Saturday Night Live for so many years. Frank's Place, the great Tim Reed. Wise Guys. Was you guys watched that show back then? That was like a Ken Olin thing, I think, right?
Was it Ken Olin?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think you're right. It was Ken Olin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's okay. Solid.
Yeah. DuckTales started that then. This is a little bit before the Disney Afternoon. Out of This World, She's the Sheriff. That was Suzanne Summers' big return to TV. My Two Dads, which was a I enjoyed that show, actually. I thought it was a great dynamic. That was really our first glimpse at Paul Reiser and Greg Evigan, fresh off BJ and the Bear. Full House, a show that becomes a staple of what will be known as TGIF, begins that year. Hooperman, which was John Ritter's return, turned out a little bit better than She's the Sheriff. A Different World, like I mentioned, I started that year. Jake and the Fat Man. Here you go, Scott. Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Yes.
Where does that lay with you? Are you original or TNG?
I'll always be original because, you know, I was always a Kirk guy because not only did he, you know, explore strange new worlds, but he picked up strange alien whois along the way. nobody wanted to do anything with Picard, the old bald guy. No, but my dad liked Next Gen. I appreciated Next Gen later on in life. It's a fantastic show. This first season was a little rough, and the second season was a little bit better, but by season three, they really found their stride.
Mm-hmm.
On a side note, I want to say this. I think A Different World was almost as good a show, if not better, than The Cosby Show. And I will say this as well. I think the show was better after Lisa Bonet left. But that's just me. Anyway, yeah. I love it. I love A Different World. I love that show. Great show.
Yeah. I mean, I just personally wasn't a big fan of the show. But it was a better show once it became more about the other characters and less about Denise Huxtable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who half cared in that first season anyway. So
yeah.
She really didn't.
And Marissa Tomei was in it too. 30-something, the popular, you know, drama at the time. Here you go. A game show that I wish they would bring back. Remote Control.
Oh, Control.
Love this show.
Great.
Right, Johnny?
What about the talent that came from that? Talking about Sandler, Colin Quinn.
Mm-hmm. Dennis Leary.
Kari Wurr.
Yeah, who else am I forgetting?
That's right.
Kari Wurr.
And it's, interestingly enough, you know, the host was a guy, Ken Ober. They thought he was going to be like the big star coming out of there.
Yeah.
Because he was pretty funny, unfortunately. Yeah, and unfortunately, he passed early, too. Yeah, he's going
to. Yeah, he did. He passed away a few years ago.
Yeah. And, but a lot of star power. Yeah, Sandler and Colin Quinn.
Yeah, Sandler would come out, one of his characters, he's no problem for me, the stud boy. Yes, Colin Quinn.
Kari Wurr.
Yes. Oof, yes.
But it
had a couple of them. She was, yeah. I think Kari Wurr was what, the second female they had? There was a girl, I think her name was Marisol, like the first
Marisol
one.
Massey. Yes, Marisol Massey. Yeah. That's right.
She was a brunette. Then he had Kari Wara, redhead. And after Kari, I can't remember her name, but she was blonde. So yeah. They kind of went all ways there.
No, but it was cool because it was the first like game show for like, you know, for young people, you know, where they asked like, you know, about pop culture and stuff instead of, you know, the typical, you know, boring game show for old fucks.
Stuff that we actually knew the answers to.
Yeah.
It was like, yeah, I have no clue what the hell these things are.
Yeah, you didn't have to be smart. You could be, if you knew about TV and, you know, and your movies and music, you'd do good. Yeah,
no, it was fun the way they would have snack break and. You know, you would sit on these, recliners and the way they would eliminate you from the game. Yeah, it was just so much fun. It was again, something I wish they would bring back. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles first hit the air.
The final, I'm sorry. The final was like, they would, when you made it to the finals, you know, to win the big money, they would show like a shitload. You had to name the songs. They would show like a shitload of videos. Yeah.
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 Something like that. Yeah.
And you had to name as many as you can in like 30 seconds.
Yeah, I think we tried to do it. We tried to play it in my basement once. We made up our home edition.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah, I used a buzzer from the Sailor Century board game because you could, it told you who buzzed in first. So, no, it was fun. We tried to.
A buddy of mine from college got on there. He was one of the contestants. Yeah.
Nice. All right, cool. On the Saturday mornings, not much change. You know, Care Bears, Wuzzles. The Real Ghostbusters, Slimer, actually, and The Real Ghostbusters, it became Superman, Garfield and Friends, the new Archies, Gummy Bears, Smurfs, you know, kind of staples of the 80s were still going strong. And your weekday afternoon, they didn't really change. They just stopped making new ones of G.I. Joe and Transformers. Mask was still going strong. SNL season 13, another strong season. Your cast pretty much unchanged from season 12. That included Dana Carvey, Nora Dunn, Phil Hartman, Jan Hooks, Victoria Jackson, John Lovitz, Dennis Miller, Kevin Nealon. Your featured players were A. Whitney Brown, Al Franken. Your rundown of your hosts and musical guests are you had Steve Martin and Sting in the season premiere. First appearance of Hans and Franz, played by Dana Carvey and Kevin Nealon, some of the more well-known. Then you had Sean Penn and LL Cool J and his brother Michael Penn separately doing that. I think this was the famous Church Lady sketch where Sean Penn gets into a fight because Church Lady's talking shit about Madonna, basically.
Oh, boy.
And he ends up getting his ass kicked by the Church Lady. And then we have Dabney Coleman and the Cars, followed by Robert Mitchum and Simply Red, Candace Bergen and Cher, Danny DeVito and Brian Ferry. Then you had Angie Dickinson and Buster Poindexter, and then David Gilmour also performed on the show, Paul Simon and Linda Ronstadt, Robin Williams and James Taylor, Carl Weathers and Robbie Robertson, Justine Bateman and Terrence Trent D'Arby, Tom Hanks, Randy Travis, and Judge Reinhold and 10,000 Maniacs. The season was cut short. All ended at the end of February. There was a Writers Guild strike. And unfortunately, Gilda Radner was slated to host on May 14th in 1988. Unfortunately, she never gets another chance to host because she unfortunately passes away from ovarian cancer the following year. She would have been the first female cast member to come back and host a show, but Julia Louis-Dreyfus got that feat a little later. It was so sad. Gilda was so special, so funny, and she had that wonderful smile. Such a shame to lose her so early. At your 39th Primetime Emmy Awards that year, your host was Bruce Willis. The Golden Girls repeat as your Outstanding Comedy Series. Outstanding Drama was L.A. Law. Your Outstanding Comedy Variety of Music Special was the 41st Annual Tony Awards. Your Outstanding Drama Special was Promise on CBS. Michael J. Fox is your Best Lead Actor in a Comedy Series. Rue McClanahan, another Golden Girl the year before it was Betty White, wins your Best Actress, Lead Actress in a Comedy Series. Bruce Willis wins for Lead Actor in a Drama for Moonlighting. Sharon Gless repeats for Kenny and Lacey as your Lead Actress in a Drama Series. John Larroquette repeats for Night Court as a Supporting Actor Comedy Series. A little upset, Jack A. Harry wins your Supporting Actress in a Comedy Series for 227. John Hillerman from Magnum P.I. is your Supporting Actor in a Drama. And Bonnie Bartlett from St. Elsewhere is your Outstanding Actress in a Supporting Role. And that's a repeat. So some notes from that year, though. On January 3rd, after being canceled by CBS at the end of the 80-45 season, Charles in Charge resurfaces in first-run syndication where it would run for an additional four seasons. You guys guys were watching Charles in Charge back in the day?
I watched it more in syndication. I don't really remember that first run.
On CBS.
I don't remember it either.
Yeah, because that was Nicole Eggert, you know, moving over there after being Marcy on Who's the Boss. So we kind of follow there. Scott, you mentioned this a little earlier. Remington Steele is resumed in January after a six-month hiatus. During the hiatus, the series' main actor, Pierce Brosnan, had won the film role of James Bond, only to lose the role when NBC unexpectedly renewed the television series. Remington Steele adopts a TV movie-length format, but only runs for a few installments before being canceled permanently. On March 19th,
so in other words, they just dicked Pierce Brosnan over.
Yeah.
They screwed him over. Yeah, Tech and I make a big point about that on the Bond series. I mean, NBC did not have to do that. The show was dead in the water. You know? Yeah.
Well, it was also, you know, Tom Selleck had a similar situation where he was, I think he was the first choice to be Indiana Jones, but he couldn't get out of his Magnum PI contract. So, you know, that has happened before. On March 19th, televangelist Jim Baker resigned as the host of the PTL Club after his involvement in a sex scandal. That was huge. That was everywhere.
Yes, Jessica Hahn.
Right, come on.
Jessica Hahn, I remember Long that. Island Hua. Long Island Hua.
Oh, she was a Long Island Hua. Oh, yeah.
I mean, come on. Jessica Hahn or Tammy Faye? Really? Come on. What are we doing?
Oh, God. Tammy Faye, it's like fucking Play-Doh.
Yeah.
You look at that she face. Jesus.
Take two cupcakes and put them on her eyes, and that was her makeup.
Oh, God.
Jim?
Jessica Hahn. Jessica Hahn is one of those dirty whoas, too.
Oh, God. Yes. Yeah.
She wasn't from the sweet section of Long Island. She was from the other side of Long Island, let me tell you.
And you watched that Wild Thing video by Sam Kinison where she's rolling around.
Oh, my God.
In front of everybody.
Oh, my God.
Machi-machi there.
Yes.
I know this is talked about a lot on the other side of the hallway, A studio. On March 29th, in front of 93,173 fans, Hulk Hogan retains the WWF World Heavyweight Championship at WrestleMania 3 at the Pontiac Silverdome, defeating his former friend, Andre the Giant. On April 5th, we mentioned this earlier, the Fox TV network made its primetime debut. The first time since 1955, we had four U.S. networks with primetime programming. CBS airs the special Michael Jackson, The Magic Returns, which features the broadcast premiere of Jackson's 18-minute-long music video for Bad on August 31st. On September 5th, Dick Clark's American Bandstand is broadcast for the 2,751st and last time on ABC after 30 years on the network. It does continue in syndication, then on cable for two more years. This was a big deal, too. On September 24th, Kirstie Alley makes her debut as Rebecca Howe in the 6th-season premiere of Cheers. Now, guys, I mean, I think we all love Cheers, but are you a Shelley Long Diane or are you a Rebecca Howe Kirstie Alley? Let's start with Dr. G. Who do you prefer on that show?
Ooh. I think I was more... I thought both were good, but I think I was more Diane.
Yeah. What about you, Scott?
I was a Diane fan. I mean, I love Kirstie Alley, but I feel like the tone of the show changed when Shelley Long left. We liked the tender relationship between Sam and Diane. Sam and Rebecca just fucked around, and they barely even did that. I feel like the second half of Cheers was about everybody else: Norm, Cliff, Carla. I feel like we got a lot of Frasier in the second half because Diane dumped him, and I think that is what precipitated Kelsey Grammer to do his own show, which we'll talk about down the line, which is fucking awesome. So I think that Diane leaving opened doors for everybody else, but yeah. I'm Diane because I thought their relationship her relationship with Sam was more genuine, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Johnny, what do you think?
Shelley Long, yeah.
It was a different dynamic. That's really what it was, you know.
Yeah, it was very genuine, very special.
It was love, you know. Him and Rebecca was lust that turned into a friendship, but you know, Rebecca does become somewhat pathetic towards the end of the show.
Yes,
yeah, she really does.
Yeah, I mean, she's a gold digger. I mean, that was kind of fun with her, you know, the Robin Colcourts and everybody else coming in there. But yeah, it was a different dynamic. It was still a great show.
I mean, I thought the show was still good.
Yeah.
What, you know, it didn't really totally miss a beat, but it was definitely a different tone. Like Scott said, I agree that the other characters really were able to come out of their shells after Shelley Long left, because it really did revolve around Shelley, Diane, and Sam. So
yeah, it was all about the will they, won't they, and then, you know, they get together and they were so different and made it so great. And yeah, Shelley was just brilliant. It was sad when she left the show. I mean, when they get married, I guess, or they were gonna get married, and she leaves to work on like get a book deal, and she goes up the stairs and he just looks up and says, "Have a good life." Oh my God. Yep. I teared up. I did. Because it was, you know, Cheers was just such a special show for that time. October 15th, Bob Barker stops dyeing his hair brown and then appears on The Price is Right for the first time with white hair. He is given a minute-long standing ovation by the audience. That actually, like, made a big deal for some reason. Sonny and Cher reunite on Late Night with David Letterman on November 13th. Another tidbit from the other side of the building. On November 26th, the very first Survivor Series professional wrestling event is broadcast on pay-per-view. That same night, the World Wrestling Federation's competitor, Jim Crockett Promotions, held their fifth annual Starrcade Supercard event. They had previously aired Starrcade only on closed-circuit television. To compete with Starrcade, the WWF introduced the Survivor Series event and held on the same night as Starrcade. The WWF also limited the amount of pay-per-view providers that would carry Starrcade by not allowing providers to carry WrestleMania 4 if they did not carry Survivor Series exclusively. Only a small amount of providers carried Starrcade, and it drew a 3.30 buy rate, while Survivor Series drew a 7.0 buy rate. So.
And it was pretty much after that that cable companies told both of them, cut the shit. Pretty much. Yeah. Knock it the fuck off. All right. Don't punish us because you two want to go at each other. So I don't think that ever happened again. They decided to go at each other with free shows, which we'll talk about in 1988. But yeah, that was the last time that cable companies were forced to pick between one or the other. They weren't dealing with that bullshit anymore, because it wasn't fair to them. Not their fault.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So, but that's going to bring an end to television as part of our Year in Pop 1987. But that's not all we have to talk about. We still have news, music, and movies to talk about when we come back with Scott Criscola, Dr. G, George Rubellino, and Gerasino D'Amato. I am Andy Atherton. Stick around. Year in Pop. Be right back.
Dad was told by mother, you can't have one.
You can't have none.
You can't have one without the other.
And welcome back to the Year in Pop 1987 here at the Place to Be Pop Experience. Scott Criscola, Andy Atherton, J. Arsenio D'Amato, and the Doctor. We are halfway through. We'll talk some news in 87, some of the big albums and great music in 87, and of course, the year in movies, 1987. But let's talk about the great feeds all around here on the quad. Here, the Place to Be Pop Experience. Andy will get to more of that later, but great shows on here, including It Was a Thing on TV. I love Greg Wiener. What a guy. He was just on a Place to Be podcast a short time ago. This show, of course, and Making Mount Rushmore, which I believe I'll be on my next episode in January. I look forward to that. I think another gentleman on this show will be on there as well. Not counting you, Andy, because you're on all of them. Of course, on the other side of the hallway, what I tackle, the Place to Be Wrestling Network, shows abound over there. Place to Be Podcast this week. We had a great show with you, Andy, as we did SummerSlam 1991. Dr. G, the newest episode of Croc and Roll dropped. You guys did September 1985. So stay tuned for that. And just a big announcement, starting in January, Croc and Roll will drop twice a month. No, they're not going to do 2 months. You're not going to get two, 9-hour podcast in 1 month. But they will take a month and split it into two parts, so you have time. So you have a nice time to listen. So starting in January, NWA Rock and Roll will be twice a month. Marty Sleaze today dropped his final part of his five-part series, counting down his top 25 TNA Impact matches with his buddy Jerome. And yeah, so a lot of great stuff here on the Wrestling Network. In 2021 will be a great year for that feed as well. And of course, across the quad, we have the Jenny Physician and the No So, all great shows that are on there. Anything else, Andy, should mention? Can't mention the GWCW because that's done. If you don't have your ballot done now, too bad. So, yeah. I think you have like 5 hours.
Yeah,
so.
It's a matter of hours if you're listening to this the day it drops to get your GWCW in.
Yeah, pretty much. So don't worry about it. But we will have great content here on the over on the Place to Be Wrestling Network in 2021 with some great NWA, WCW match countdown pods. So stay tuned for that.
And the results will be posted on PlaceMation.com. So check that out. That should be dropping probably every Friday once the everything is tabulated. And our good friend, I believe it's Tyler Kelly, right? Who does the hard work of putting together all the rankings and ranks. Any match that is nominated will get mentioned. So that you could be, a lot of stuff a lot of matches will, not just the top 100, but you'll see everything that got a vote.
Yep. So there you go. Go to placemination.com/Amazon. Wait for all the gift cards you got for Christmas and Smokey Robinson's Chinooka. Cash them in and get some great stuff. And we get a little bit Tears of Chinooka. check it out. So all the great stuff on all the feeds. I'm trying not to use the word feed. It sounds so like technical. The network, the experience, the position, the connection, all these catchwords. All the great podcasts.
Chill out.
All the great podcasts we have. Dr. G's Wrestling Cornucopia. Dr. G's going to count down his 100 favorite AEW matches. Good luck with that.
Coming soon, The Reverberation.
The Reverberation. So. All right, well, let's continue on with the Year of Pop 1987. Let's check out what's going on in the headlines in the newspaper. Yes, there were newspapers still in 1987. So for 1987 in news, Andy, the floor is yours.
All right, well, it wasn't the not a lot sticks at you, but a lot. But what did happen was important. The first case of an American court ruling on the validity of surrogacy is declared by a New Jersey court over custody rights of baby M. An agreement, which is a surrogacy agreement with Mary Beth Whitehead. In 1985, William Stern and his wife Elizabeth Stern entered into a surrogacy agreement with Mary Beth, paying her $10,000. She gave birth on March 27th. She then leaves New Jersey with the daughters. It turned out to be a whole to-do, but they affirmed that what the best interest of the child analysis and remanded the case to family courts. They awarded the custody to Stern, and Whitehead was given visitation rights. On May 19th, 19-year-old Matthias Rust, a West German citizen, flew a small Cessna airplane to Moscow, landing in Red Square. The daring teenager flew the plane undetected into Soviet airspace, stating that his motivation was to bring peace between the Soviets and the U.S. He was arrested. When he arrived, he was greeted by a curious strangers and then arrested for violating Soviet airspace. He went on trial and was sentenced to 4 years in a labor camp, but was released after 14 months as part of a goodwill gesture after the signing of the Non-Proliferation Treaty. So, yeah, that's when a teenager can come in your airspace undetected. That shows there are some holes in your defense. But on June 12th, United States President Ronald Reagan delivered his famous speech at the Berlin Wall in West Berlin. The speech came at the height of the Cold War and was a rallying cry for the unification of Berlin. Reagan implored the leader of the Soviet Union, Mikhail Gorbachev, to tear down this wall, urging him to include the reunification of Germany and part of Gorbachev's perestroika, which is restructuring that was promised to the world when he assumed power. Reagan also used the speech to encourage Soviet leaders to work with the United States in initiating new arms reduction talks. Stock markets around the world follow with falls by the end of October. The stock market crashed in the U.S. on Monday, October 19th, 1987, with a 508-point drop or 22.6%. And like I said, the around the world followed the end of October. Australia had fallen 41.8%, Canada 22.5%, Hong Kong 45.8%, and the United Kingdom 26.4%. So, yeah, not a big year in news, but a lot of important stuff did occur. And with that, we're going to, what were we listening to? What was playing on the radio? What was your Billboard Hot 100? And what were your great albums? Scott Criscolo is going to tell you that right now.
Why, thank you, Andy. And let's go through the top 20. I'll go from 20 to 1. The top 20 Hot 100 Billboard songs for the end of 1987. At number 20, a song that was made popular on a TV show. Anyone remember, of course, the episode of Family Ties when Alex Keaton and his future wife would dance to At This Moment by Billy Vera and the Beaters. What would you think I would do at this moment? What a great song. The guy, I don't know if he did anything after that, but or if he did anything before that. At number 19, Billy Idol with his cover of Money Money. At number 18, the debut single for the girl that would forever be known as the Mall Queen, Tiffany, with I Think We're Alone Now, which was a cover, by the way. At number 17, a song that I think your wife likes, Dr. G, Head to Toe by Lisa Lisa and Cult Jam. Dr. G doesn't like them. His wife does. At number 16, yes, Looking for a New Love by Jody Watley. Number 15, With or Without You by U2, one of my favorite songs from one of my favorite albums, which we'll talk about shortly. Number 14, Always by Atlantic Star, which we all used to sing on the school bus in eighth grade. Don't ask me why. At number 13, Don't Dream It's Over by Crowded House. Good song there. Number 12, Everybody Have Fun Tonight. Everybody Wang Chung.
We were talking about Cheers earlier.
Yes, there you go.
Yeah, that favorite, the episode where they had Frasier's bachelor party. You know, gentlemen, I was listening to a rock and roll station on the way over here to get in the mood of everybody's tonight's festivities, and there was a song that I believe should be the keynote that was mentioned in one of those passages of one of those tribal ritual songs. That is Everybody Have Fun Tonight. Everybody Wang Chung Tonight.
Oh, so great. Good episode. Good episode. Number 10, your top 10. Number 10, Living on a Prayer by Bon Jovi. That was a huge song back then. Number 9, Shakedown by Bob Seger, which was on a soundtrack of a movie that hopefully Mr. Atherton will mention in our final segment. At number 8, The Way It Is by Bruce Hornsby and The Range, which was a great song then. Dr. G and I saw him live several years later, and we don't think you remember the words. Number 7, Here I Go Again by Whitesnake. Oh, Tawny Katane and the accidental boobs flying out of her dress in the video. Yes. Yum. Number 6, C'est La Vie by Robbie Neville. Not exactly Girls in Cars, but who's counting? At number 5, Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now by Starship from another movie soundtrack from a movie that Mr. Atherton will hopefully mention in a little bit. Number 4, I Want to Dance with Somebody by Whitney. Number 3, Shake You Down by Greg.
Here in my life, girl, I'm gonna shake you down. Number 2 was Alone by Heart. And number 1 was Walk Like an Egyptian by the Bangles. Do, 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 do. Walk like an Egyptian. Yes, it was quite a year for music that year. Yes.
Yeah. Lots of other great songs. Lady in Red by Cliff Steberg, another from a movie. So I Found What I'm Looking For by U2 from that same album. George Michael, I Want Your Sex. Lean on Me by Club Nouveau. Madonna had a big year. Open Your Heart. Lost in Emotion came out. I believe that was another Lisa Lisa and Cult Jam.
And the top 10 albums that year, Genesis, Invisible Touch. That's a hot one. She seems to have an invisible touch. Was a Legal Alien on that one? I'm not sure. I think I'm... fun being an illegal alien.
Yes, I remember that.
Number 9 was Rapture, Anita Baker. Number 8, Cinderella with Night Songs.
Oh, don't know what you got till it's gone.
Yeah. Number 7, Huey Lewis and the News with 4.
good follow up to sports. Yeah.
Yep. Number six, the Joshua Tree by U2. Big smash there. Number five, Janet Jackson, banger, Control. And Scott mentioned Bruce Hornsby. Actually had the number four album that year. It wasn't just a one hit number with the way
I didn't
it
realize
is.
It was that high.
Yeah, the album actually did well. Yeah, I can't remember the other songs off the top of my head, but just the way it is. But I guess he had a couple more singles. He juiced out of it. Number three, License to Ill by the Beastie Boys.
Great album.
You gotta fight. Hold that out. Yes.
You hold it up to a mirror, it says, eat me on the plane.
Number two, not a big fan of this, but can't deny a success, but Paul Simon with Graceland. Was this, yeah, I could call you Betty. Was this You Could Call Me Al?
Yeah, I believe it was on that album, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And number one, everybody loves this one, Bon Jovi, Slippery When Wet.
Mm-hmm. I do. Yes. It is a fun album. Yeah, Scott, what do you think of these albums?
Most of them are awesome. Sorry, guys, for the technical snafu there. Thank you, Johnny. Well done with the album. Sounded awesome. I loved all of these, or most of them anyway. I agree with Johnny. I'm not a Graceland fan. License to Ill is so fucking good. Mm-hmm. So fucking good. There is not one bad song on that album. Me and two of my buddies would sit in the back of the classroom and quietly do Paul Revere without anybody listening. People are like, she did what with a wiffle ball bat? Never mind. Yes, and it does say Eat Me on the Wing. But then you had Brass Monkey. You had Slow and Low. That is the tempo. You had, obviously, Dr. G's theme, No Sleep Till Brooklyn. And, of course, Fight Great. Right. Just a fantastic album. I know U2 is a very polarizing band, but the Joshua Tree is a great album. Mm-hmm. It's a great album. It really is. But I know U2 is one of those bands you either absolutely love or absolutely hate. You know what's an underrated album, though? And I'm curious your guys' thoughts on it. I don't know if you were talking about it when I was not on yet, back on yet. But Invisible Touch by Genesis is a good album.
Yes.
It's a really good album. I'm bringing it up now because I'm trying to see besides the title track, Invisible Touch, I'm trying to see what other singles are on that album.
Wasn't Atlantic Confusion on that one?
Well, you had Invisible Touch, Tonight, Tonight, Tonight,
Oof.
Land of Confusion, In Too Deep, and Throwing It All Away.
Wow.
So I mean, five of those eight songs on that album were bona fide top 10 hits. So, yeah, it's a killer album by Genesis. Killer album. Good song. I don't know where you started counting, Johnny, but just talk
number about 10.
Oh, you started at 10? Okay.
I reeled off the top 10. Yeah.
Okay, good.
I noticed that year a lot of our typical superstars were kind of tailing off as far as sales. Like you see Prince signed at the Times, down in the 50s. Billy Joel, The Bridge, one of his lesser efforts. Mm-hmm. As far as sales, but Whitney had a two, just below the top 20, right at 21 and 22 there. She released hers back-to-back.
Johnny, I thought we were going to get through the music without mentioning his name for an episode.
That's
sorry,
right.
I did say The Bridge is one of his worst albums, so I don't think he's going to get much glowing praise from the boys, but we'll
see. The Bridge is... The Bridges. As a matter of fact, George and I are going to sing Running on Ice, right? So,
hey, Running on Ice is in a great Office episode.
Yes.
Threat Level Midnight.
Yep. Some other albums. You talked about back-to-back Whitney's. 22 was her solo album from the year before, which was still doing well. And then Whitney was the one that had the other hits as well. So by Peter Gabriel, though, that's an amazing album. Tons of stuff on that. Of course, Sledgehammer and Big Time, which would be used at a future WrestleMania. Whitesnake at 16, of course, that had Still of the Night and Here I Go Again and Is This Love, all hits there.
Mm-hmm.
True Blue is a good album by Madonna. The soundtrack to Top Gun, can't go wrong with that. We'll talk more about that movie shortly. Bad Animals by Heart, great album. Yeah, Sign of the Times was solid, but not great. I mean, it was not, well, it wasn't Purple Rain by any stretch. It wasn't 1999 either. Girls, Girls, Girls by Motley Crue. Fantastic album. Raised on Radio by Journey. Not great, because this was right at the end before Steve Perry quit or whatever. Now, I can't believe that this Gregory Abbott album is at 53, because I can't remember any other hits on it besides that. So,
Right before you went out, I had sung the whole thing while you're standing there. You're in my life, girl, I'm going to shake you down. I can give you all the love that you need. Yeah,
That's how we got Jessica Hahn out of Massapequa High School. Notorious by Duran Duran. How much Duran Duran was being played in your house, Dr. G? Did you break all your sister's records?
I was not a big fan of theirs.
So you,
my sister, come back.
So you broke all your sister's records.
they hadn't done. Yeah, you know, they kind of fell off for a little while. And they came back with Notorious.
Yeah.
Because you had Rio and Seven and a Ragged Tiger and all that.
Yep. You know, besides the number one album, Bon Jovi had two others. His previous album, 7800 Degrees Fahrenheit, was in the 70s, as was his debut album. So Bon Jovi was in a good stretch here, selling tons of records in that year. But why would The Return of Bruno by Bruce Willis be at 84? I mean, that's just criminal. So was that movie. So was that album. So some great albums. A great year for albums in 1987. That was another reason I love that year so much. Just so many albums. You know what album came out in 87 that's not on this list? Permanent Vacation by Aerosmith, which is a tremendous album. Not on this list. Why, I don't know. But fuck you, Billboard. Let me see. It might be on the 88 list, but let me see what year or when in... when in 87 it came out. It came out in summer. Let me see. It came out August 25th, 1987. So we'll probably see it on the 88 list. But Permanent Vacation was an amazing album. What else came out in 87? Again, probably on... I'm not going to say it till I know for a fact. Let's see. It came out July 21st, 1987. We'll see the sales for it on the 88 list. But gentlemen, one of the most incredible debut albums in rock history came out on July 21st, 1987. The name of the album? Appetite for Destruction. By arguably one of my favorite bands in the history of the universe, Guns N' Roses. Yeah. The fucking album's amazing. Top to bottom.
I believe a song won a tournament in some way.
I believe it did. Yes, I believe it did. Yes, I believe there was a bunch of fine Swedes that had Taste of Music. South Africa. Yeah. New Zealand.
Love that album.
Yeah. Appetite for Destruction is so fucking good. Oh, my God. Top to bottom. Welcome to the Jungle. Paradise City. Sweet Child of Mine. Anything Goes. Rocket Queen. God, Mr. Brownstone,
My Michelle.
Oh, fucking A. I cannot not listen to that album from beginning to end. It's that fucking good. And it'll probably show up in the 88 list, so we'll talk more about it in the next episode. But damn it, what a good album. Oh, 1987. Maybe that's why I love the year so much, because 1987 was just an amazing year for music. The albums were just falling out all over the place. So good. Yeah, so in the span of 8 weeks... maybe 6 weeks, I guess you can count. Appetite for Destruction and Permanent Vacation came out in the same summer. So what a summer for music as I was heading into high school. So good. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Did another album come out? I'm going to check something here real quick. Doing a little winging it here for a moment, folks. I just want to see if this album came out in 87. No, that came out in
84. That's why we're going to fire you and make John the new reader of the albums.
Oh, no. Master Puppets came out in 86. All right, so it was in between for Metallica albums. All right, so there's your albums in 1987. Just amazing music. The Grammys were on February 24th. This was stuff that came out in 86. Billy Crystal, really? He did the Oscars and the fucking Grammys? Jesus Christ.
He hadn't done the Oscars yet, I don't think.
Had he not? Okay. Record of the Year was Higher Love by Steve Winwood. Graceland, Johnny, believe it or not, won Album of the Year. And I'm kind of perplexed by that because, I mean, it's okay. But, I mean, there were better albums. In my
opinion. Well, yeah, it's big, critically acclaimed.
Yeah, it's better albums. Song of the Year, That's What Friends Are For. Of course, the AIDS benefit song with Dionne Warwick, Elton John, Gladys Knight, Stevie. I remember singing it in my eighth grade class. And speaking of Bruce Hornsby, they won Best New Artist that year at the Grammys. Later that year, the MTV Video Music Awards, hosted by two of my favorite VJs of all time, Downtown Julie Brown and Carolyn Heldman. Peter Gabriel, 12 nominations. He won 10 of them because fucking Sledgehammer was amazing as a video. Video of the Year and Best Male Video. Best Female Video was Papa Don't Preach. And Best Group Video.
Yes. Thanks to Danny Aiello.
Yeah, Danny Aiello is the dad. That's right. And Best Group Video, Wild Wild Life by nice. Talk.
That's a fun video with a very early John Goodman.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. The second class, or is this the first class? No, this is the second class. The second class of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Obviously, these early classes are just going to be nothing but heavy hitters because they're trying to fill it up. So the class is Aretha Franklin.
First woman.
Excuse me. I got to do it. I got to do it the Vince way. Miss Aretha Franklin.
Hey, you know her performance left a lot to be desired.
Yeah, yeah. I know. Yeah.
Now, quote to Gorilla.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yes, yeah. I love Gorilla. Fuck, she must have been a twat backstage.
Exactly. On the prime time after when Bobby was talking about it, and Gorilla said, "Oh, you know, her performance left a lot to be desired."
To be desired.
Yeah. Would you knock it off?
Oh, it's so great. The rest of the class, all heavy hitters: the Coasters, Eddie Cochran, Bo Diddley, the Bo Diddley beat, bum 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 bum, the Bo Diddley beat, Marvin Gaye, Bill Haley, Clyde McFadder, Ricky Nelson, Roy Orbison, Carl Perkins, the aforementioned guy who's going to write a new song called Tears of the guy's going to write the new song Tears of
Chanuka.
Smokey Robinson. And Dr. G's probably wondering what we're talking about. We'll get to that. And Jack Nicholson. So just so everyone know what the joke is, somebody who was a next door neighbor as a kid of Smokey Robinson got him to do a cameo for this person's mom and said, "Oh, you know, I grew up with you. I didn't know you lived across the street from me, yada, yada, yada." And he said, "Happy Chanuka." And he said it as if he thought the word was Chanuka, not like us saying Chanuka as a joke. I say to all my Jewish friends, "Happy Chanuka." But he said Chanuka as if that's how you say it. So that's why we're making a joke. Look it up. Look it up on YouTube.
That's awesome.
Annika. It's ridiculous. So there's the... there's your Rock and Roll Hall of Fame class. And again, guys, these next several, you know, next few episodes, the Hall of Fame classes are going to be fucking loaded because they're brand new. So they're filling them with all the heavyweights. And finally, on February 26th, the first four Beatles albums, Please Please Me, With the Beatles, Hard Day's Night, and Beatles for Sale are released on compact disc. Capitol Records decides to release the original UK mixes of the Beatles albums, which means the first four CDs are in mono, which marks the first time that many of these mono mixes are available in the United States. That was a big deal. She didn't talk like the Beatles were, you know, you had like the tapes and stuff, but you know, in the 80s, you know, it had been what, 6.5 years since John Lennon was killed. So the Beatles kind of, you know, were not really in the, you know, forefront. George Harrison would have an album come out later in 87 and would be big in 88. You know, Paul wasn't doing much and Ringo really wasn't doing much. He did that shitty caveman movie event a few years before and married, what's her face?
Catherine Bach.
Barker Bach. Yeah. So big deal to get, Beatles albums on CD. And that is 1987 in music. Great albums, great songs, and a good rock and roll class. So let us wrap things up with 1987 in film. Andy Atherton, floor is yours.
Thank you very much. So at the 59th Annual Academy Awards on March 30th, 1987, talking about movies released in 1986, your hosts were Chevy Chase, Goldie Hawn, and Paul Hogan. Your best picture was Platoon. Big night for that movie. Oliver Stone gives your best director for that movie. Paul Newman wins your best actor Oscar for The Color of Money. Marlee Matlin for Children of a Lesser God is your best actress. Very delightful woman. I actually have met her. Michael Caine.
Big deal. That was a big deal, too, because she's deaf.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was a big deal.
But Michael Caine was your best supporting actor for Hannah and her sisters.
Nice.
You no-sold the deaf girl so you could do your Michael Caine accent. But but by the way, you know, though, you know why Michael Caine could not accept the Oscar live?
I do know that because we talked about it on, I believe, the first episode of Blockbuster Rewind.
That's right, because he had to do reshoots for Jaws the Revenge.
Yes.
Shaka, did you ever see that movie? You ever see Jaws the Revenge? Dr. G, did you ever see Jaws the Revenge?
No, I did not see that one.
I'm going to make you watch it.
Oh, anyway, it is a fun, bad movie to watch.
It is. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
The stalking shark.
Sharks with consciences or whatever. I don't know. Anyway,
he takes down. He attacks a plane.
Yeah. And he's swimming in it's a shark in the waters of the Caribbean, which is warm water, which they would die. So who knows? So fucking stupid. Anyway, go ahead. Continue.
Also for Hannah and her sisters, Diane Wiest wins your best supporting actress. Woody Allen wins for a best original screenplay for Hannah and her sisters. Best adapted screenplay went to A Room with a View. Platoon and A Room with a View tied for most nominations with 8. Platoon wins with 4. That's the most. And Ralph Bellamy gets your honorary Oscar. Let's talk about the top 10 domestic gross movies, and then we'll go on to the rest of the year. At number 10, starring Jack Nicholson and a trio of beautiful women, including Cher, Michelle Pfeiffer, and Susan Sarandon, that is The Witches of Eastwick. Fun movie. Jack Nicholson hamming it up, chewing up the scenery left and right.
Big time.
Mm-hmm. At number 9, Lethal Weapon, the first installment of that franchise, the buddy cop movie starring Mel Gibson and Danny Glover. It was a lot of fun. Stakeout at number 8, that was Richard Dreyfuss and Emilio Estevez. Number 7, I actually love this movie. It is underrated and very funny. And Michael J. Fox, The Secret of My Success. I believe it's Margaret Whitten plays his aunt, and she steals the movie. She is hysterical. As much as you hated her in Major League, you love her in this movie.
Yeah, she was a cougar, though. She's pretty hot, so it's okay.
Oh, she was very hachi-machi. Yeah, oh, definitely. My God. But it was just so funny, though. At number 6, The Untouchables, with the great Sean Connery.
The late, great Sean Connery. The Chicago way. You want to get Capone? Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
So good. Great movie. Mm-hmm. Absolutely great movie.
Number 5, Cher is here again. Moonstruck, with her Oscar-winning performance, and Nicolas Cage. Awesome movie. A shout out to, I mentioned her, my girlfriend Ellen, hugest Cher fan I know, so she'd be very happy to hear that. Number 4, Good Morning Vietnam, quite one of the best performances of Robin Williams' career.
Good movie.
Yeah, good movie. Everybody thinks it's so funny, but it's actually really serious at times. But
any movie about Vietnam has a serious tone to it in some capacity. So,
but yeah, it kind of ebbs and flows where it's like, you know, you get some serious and then you get him, he comes off doing something funny, you know. Excuse me, sir, since the VP is such a VIP, shouldn't a PC be kept on the QT? Because it could call MIA and we could call into the VD and we could all be put on KP. And if you do, what does 3 up and 3 down mean to you, Airman? End of an inning? So, Scott, you mentioned this earlier. Number 3, Beverly Hills Cop 2, The Return of Axel Foley.
Great.
Yes, we did that. I did an episode of Blockbuster Rewind on that franchise as well. I'm just shilling that shit left and right tonight. Number 2, Fatal Attraction, Michael Douglas, Glenn Close. I don't think I've ever seen it all the way through. I've seen bits and pieces.
It's fucked up. She's fucked up. She's amazing in that, Glenn Close. She's pretty hachi-machi in that, too. As a matter of fact, Ann Archer's pretty hachi-machi. So I don't know. Michael Douglas, what a douche. Get a hot wife. The fuck did you get Glenn? I mean, Glenn Close was a fucking nut job. Trust me. I've known my share of nut jobs.
You know what it is about Crazy Snatch?
Yeah. It's pretty good. unfortunately, the price is way too high. So poor bunny rabbit.
Boiled his bunny. And at number one, this was the kind of surprising, though, looking at these other movies. Three Men and a Baby was your number one domestic gross film. Good movie. Had some urban legends to it. Fun premise, you know, Ted Danson, Tom Selleck, Steve Guttenberg, all pretty much top of their game at the time. I mean, you know, Tom Selleck was, you know, Magnum P.I. Ted Danson was, you know, Sam Malone. And, you know, Steve Guttenberg as Carrie Mahoney from.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, three guys that have to take care of a baby that's up to their doorstep trying to figure out who the father is. You know, it was a fun movie.
It's a nice mix on that top 10. And for a preview, you will be hearing about a couple of those movies on a future Mount Rushmore.
That's right. That's going to be a lot of fun. Really looking forward to that episode. Other movies, though, released in 1987, the Richard Pryor movie, Critical Condition. Outrageous Fortune, that is, I believe, Bette Midler, Richard Dreyfuss. A funny Woody Allen movie, Radio Days. I remember seeing that in a film class. I always think of trying to...
No, Shelley Long and Bette Midler. I don't think Richard Dreyfuss was in it. Yeah.
I was confused with Down in Beverly Hills, I think. Radio Days, though, with a... It was really funny. They're teaching this girl how not to have an accent. She keep talking to her. You gotta say, "Hawk, I hear the cannons roar, roar, roar." We mentioned this earlier when we went through the music with "Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now." Mannequin, young Kim Cattrall, not as young as Police Cammy, but still, she, her and Andrew McCarthy having fun in a department store with, James Spader, very slime.
Meshach Taylor,
Hollywood. And you had G.W. Bailey off of Police Academy, and he was a night guard with the bulldog, I guess.
Sweet Chuck.
No.
Oh no, I'm thinking of the other guy. Never mind.
Tim Kazurinsky, yeah.
Yeah.
Another movie for guys who like movies over the top.
Oh, that's a Dr. G movie right there. That's right in your wheelhouse, Over the Top. That's another one we got to watch. I haven't seen that in ages. Another great Kenny Loggins song. Meet me halfway.
Yeah, he had a lot of string of hits in the 80s with the, you know, movies.
Absolutely. And that's a killer one, too, by the way, Over the Top. It's a good one.
Scott, you're the horror guy. Where does A Nightmare on Elm Street 3, The Dream Warriors, rank for you?
Very high. Nightmare on Elm Street, the first one, is, of course, amazing. The second one was, okay. This one's excellent. It's got a good soundtrack.
Dokken.
Great mix of young actors in it, including very young Patricia Arquette. Craig Wasson's in it. Actually, very young Larry Fishburne's in it. Good mix of kids. Good story. It was actually an excellent. It's one of the better Freddy installments, definitely. And then they go through a little bit of a dip. The next two movies are pretty terrible. Hmm. But this one is really good. I like that.
Yeah, Some Kind of Wonderful. That was, I believe that was
That's real good. Eric Stoltz.
Eric Stoltz. Mary Elizabeth. No, not Mary. I was
going to say Mary Stuart Masterson.
I was almost say Mary Elizabeth Master Antonio. Yeah, Mary. Yep. Mary Stuart
and Leah Thompson. Yeah.
Oh, Leah Thompson.
Angel Heart, which I've never actually seen, but I heard.
You know, I owned it.
Oh, okay. That about the infamous, I guess, sex scene between.
Oh, yeah.
Mickey Rourke and Lisa Bonet, apparently that
guy with chicken blood. Oh my God, it's fucking hot as fuck. Let me tell you.
That apparently, the rumor, the urban legend, I don't know how true it is, that they were so hot and heavy that when they yelled cut, they ran to the trailer to finish off the act because they got so into it.
They finished off each other? Wow, I didn't know that at all. Yeah, they're banging with chicken blood. Pretty awesome, actually. Robert De Niro plays a good he's a pretty good bad guy in that movie too. Not a bad movie.
The Coen brothers, Raising Arizona.
Oh my God, can I just say something about Raising Arizona? It's the only movie, first of all, it's fucking Nicolas Cage, and we all know how much I love him, but the fact that it's the only movie my sister ever walked out of. She absolutely weird. It was absolutely stupidest fucking thing ever. It's before the Coen brothers were actually funny. They were like almost too weird. But at this point, they got better over time. But
still a lot of people don't like the don't get him. So
I
see that reaction.
I vetoed Big Lebowski a couple of times for Laugh in Theater because I just can't
get it. It's a comedy. Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah.
Blind Date. That is the Bruce Willis, Kim Basinger,
John Larroquette.
Yep. Project X, the Matthew Broderick with the monkeys.
Yep.
One of the biggest bombs in Hollywood history, Ishtar, with Dustin Hoffman and Warren Beatty.
Yep.
Harry and the Hendersons, fun family film. A lot of great action movies came out that didn't make the top 10. Predator.
Oh, so good.
Yeah.
Arnold and Carl Weathers.
And Jesse.
Yes.
Jesse Carl the Weathers body.
So badass when his character gets killed.
I know. Dr. G, you a Predator fan? That might be something we have to watch, you and I.
Yeah, I did like that. You know, I haven't seen it in a long time. That would be one I wouldn't mind watching again.
I ain't got time to bleed. I can't do it in the great Peter's voice, but
I know.
I ain't got time to bleed. You know, there's a bleed, a blood conspiracy with the type O blood.
So good.
And we have a bunch of really funny comedies. Roxanne, a movie. I love this movie.
Steve Martin. Yeah, Steve Schnoz.
I really like your shoes, but as much as I really like your shoes, I would not like to be in your shoes at this moment in time. Oh, God. Dragnet with Tom Hanks and Dan Aykroyd, who does the best.
Very funny.
Joe Friday. Oh.
Spaceballs, some good comedies.
Spaceballs, which I did with Glennie Buns
from
Laughing Theater.
One of the first ones.
Fun episode, yes. Love Glenn. We don't get to talk to him nearly as much as we should anymore. Adventures in Babysitting, Elizabeth Shue. Inner Space, where Dennis Quaid gets injected basically into Martin Short. Great war movie, Full Metal Jacket.
Oh my God. What is your major malfunction, numbnuts? Such a good
movie. Hello, Joker.
Such a good movie.
Mm-hmm. Jaws of Revenge, we mentioned it earlier.
Such not a good movie.
Is that what I think it is?
Future WCW star, RoboCop.
Yeah, RoboCop came out.
That's right. Yep. Mm-hmm.
La Bamba, the Richie Valens story, starring Lou Diamond Phillips. Summer School with a very hot,
Courtney Thorne Smith.
Courtney Thorne Smith and, just talking about her. Kirstie Alley, that's right.
Yeah, Mark Harmon.
Mm-hmm.
God, who else is in that?
Chainsaw and Dave.
Chainsaw and Dave. And then the principal's a fucking jerk off. Yeah. Oh, shit. I can't think of his name. Anyway.
Freddie Shoup was the name of the teacher. Superman 4, The Quest for Peace.
Ugh. Awful.
There you go, Scott. The 15th Bond movie, The Living Daylights.
Yes. The movie that was supposed to have Pierce Brosnan if NBC wasn't a bunch of douche fucks and forced that shitty season of Remington Steele. This was supposed to be Pierce's movie. Of course, it was Timothy Dalton. It's still pretty good, but. It should have been Timothy Dalton. I should have been Pierce Brosnan.
Dude, fucks. Okay. All right. It's too vernacular. Another great movie. Oh, God. This is so 80s. The Lost Boys.
Yes. You're eating maggots, Michael. Oh, good movie.
I wish, if Jenny's got to bring back Freak Out Driver, she's got to do that movie. I don't think she's done that yet, has she?
I don't think she has. No, I don't think she has.
Yes. I would love her and Miranda to do that together. That would be hysterical.
It would be hysterical.
Can't Buy Me Love. That was the McLovin. Patrick Dempsey, where he basically buys a cheerleader to make him popular after mowing lawns.
Yep.
The great Fat Boys vehicle, Disorderlies.
So bad.
No Way Out. As the drama with I believe Kevin Costner.
Kevin Costner, born, and Sean Young. Yep.
Yes, born in East L.A. With Cheech Marin.
Cheech Marin.
Cheech Marin.
Yep. I'm surprised this movie didn't make the top 10. Dirty Dancing.
Yeah.
I feel like Dirty Dancing got better with time than it did at the time. That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
I feel like time has made that movie better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nobody puts baby in the corner.
The spoof, Amazon Women on the Moon. There you go. Yes. Another horror movie for you, Scott. Hellraiser.
The original Hellraiser is excellent. Clive Barker. Douglas Bradley as Pinhead. Time to play. The future sequels would be a hit or miss, but the first Hellraiser is very, very good. Very good.
The Princess Bride.
Yeah.
I think I think that would fall under a comedy. I gotta get that on Laugh in Theater.
Andre? Of course you do.
I'm Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die. I see you're using Benetti's defense against me. I consider it apropos with the rocky terrain. I have something to tell you. I'm not left-handed. I was going to tell you as well. I'm not left-handed either. Oh, great movie. Have fun storming the castle.
Good movie.
We got Lesson Zero.
That's a great movie. Is that the one with Robert Downey and Jamie Gertz and Kelly and Andrew McCarthy? Yeah, that's a good movie, actually.
Yep. Another great action movie, The Running Man.
Oh, another good Arnold movie.
Yeah. Yep. And Jesse's in that one, too. Yeah. The announcer. And Richard Dawson.
Only in a rewind. Only in a what? Only in a repeat.
the prick game show host, Richard Dawson.
Yes.
He didn't even have to act.
Yes, which we also talked about that on Make Your Mount Rushmore in the last episode. Cheap plug. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Yes.
Good
mm-hmm.
movie.
I'll have to do that next Thanksgiving on that show. Here. Throw Mama from the Train. Very, very funny. You lied to me, bam, when he hits him with the thing. That's actually a remake of Strangers on a Train, the Hitchcock movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know if you guys knew that. Wall Street.
Oh, my God. Is amazing. Greed works. Greed is right.
Eddie Murphy Raw, great concert film.
Amazing concert movie. I'm trying to think. It's Raw. Delirious. I probably know better than the rest.
It's Delirious, then Raw.
Delirious is the orange leather, and Raw is the purple leather.
Yes, that's correct.
That's right. Okay. Both awesome.
Yep. Overboard.
That's my favorite gag, though, when Eddie says, everybody talks to me. They think I talk swear like in normal language. Like people walk up to me in airports. Hello, Eddie. Fuck you.
Oh, the foreigners. Yeah.
Foreigners. Fuck you, Eddie. That's so great.
Eddie, I know who you are. You're the fuck you, man.
Fuck you, man. Oh, my God. 80s Eddie is just epic. Epic.
Yes, he was talking about, when Bill Cosby called him up to yell at him. I have wanted to talk to you about all the things you do in the show.
In your show.
He's like, I got so mad, I called up Richard Pryor. Richard Pryor's like, next time, motherfucker, I'll tell him suck my dick. I don't give a fuck. Do people laugh when you say your stuff? Yes. Do you get paid? Yes. Well, tell Bill I said to have a coke and a smile. Shut the fuck up.
Have a coke and a smile. Shut the fuck up. So good. Great. I got to find that. I think it's on Netflix. I got to find that.
A couple more. Overboard. That's the Goldie Hawn, Kurt Russell film.
The movie that pretty much they met. I think they got married right after it. Or actually, they never got married, but they hooked up after that, I guess.
Yeah. And then we have Broadcast News.
Good movie. Albert Brooks.
Yep.
What's her name? Amy Madigan, I think. Is that her?
Yeah, that's the famous scene where she's running with the tape.
Yes.
Yep. Through and ducking under. I think everybody's worked in television has had their Broadcast News moment.
Yes.
One or another, running with the tape or something through the hallways.
Yep.
To get to something. Yep. And with that, that's going to bring a close to the movie section of this episode, as well as the show itself, Year in Pop, 1987. Excellent year, excellent show, gentlemen. Before we leave, though, let's go around the room and say, what do we all have to promote and look out for on social medias? Let's start with you, Mr. J. Arsenio D'Amato.
What can people find? Right. On the sister station, the North-South Network, This Week in the NFL, every week, me, Roger, senior and writer. Playoffs are gearing up, and we'll get you set for that every week. And also, bi-weekly, the Extreme Three-Way Dance, where we dive into some ECW action. And also, upcoming on Mount Rushmore, we'll have some fun stuff with you, Andy.
Yes, I'm really looking forward to
it. We got some classics. People are going to love the next ones.
I agree.
You know, I do throw up softballs for certain guests. And, you guys took the bait, which I'm very glad you did. Dr. G, what do you got to promote?
Well, we'll do our weekly show, the NWA Saturday Special, this Saturday after this drops on, on the 31st. Ours will drop over the weekend, and we'll do a replay of our Mount Rushmore for the NWA, the Mount Rushmore episode that we did maybe about 4 or 5 months ago.
Yep.
So we're looking forward to that. Yep. When did we do it, Scott?
Mid-July. It was mid-July. Okay. We did it the week after we did It was the episode we did right after we did our Legacy of the Great American Bash.
So if you haven't listened to it, take a listen to it. And then the NWA Crock and Roll right now, the September of 85 episode is out. And we'll be recording soon, next week, we'll be recording the November of 85, which will be released. Scott, you know all this stuff better than I do because you schedule everything.
Your October 85 episodes will drop twice in the month of January. Dates to be determined.
To be determined.
Well, I know what they are, but let's keep them in suspense. Little kayfabe doesn't hurt, Dr. G. Just
definitely
a little.
But I'm looking forward. And, you know, guys, this was a great show tonight. So thanks for having me. We covered a lot. And, you know, 1987 was a big year for Scott, obviously.
Woo-hoo! 21 minutes in heaven, baby. 21 seconds in my face.
Happy New Year, guys.
Happy New Year to you, George. And Scott. That was our New Year present.
Happy New Year back then for Scott as well.
21 minutes in heaven and 21 seconds in my schvanz. All right. So follow me on Twitter at PTBPodfather. And as Dr. G said, we'll have a brand new episode of, again, a best of 2020 episode, if you will, this weekend. But Dr. G and I will be back next Saturday, January 9th, with a brand new episode. We do have some fresh NWA news to let you know about. Brand new episode of the Police Beat podcast this past week. Andy, you, me, and the doctor. I'm sorry, you, me, and the doctor. I did it to him on the show, too. You, me, and JR did SummerSlam 1991. I will be recording next week the first new Place to Be Nation's main event of 2021. Brandon Howard's coming back. Our good friend. He used to be a guest on Clotheslines and Headlines, and he was on a few main events. Scheduling for a little while didn't allow it, but he is on next week to record. And we'll talk about 2020 in wrestling in the wallet. Not just the creative part, but who made money and who didn't make money during the year of no crowds and what to look for in 2021. So look forward to that coming up next week. And yeah, it's going to be a great month for wrestling on the Wrestling Network. A show will be debuting pertaining to the WWE era of ECW. Lord help us. I am a master of charity. So that's my plugs. Andy, back to you before I get my 7 seconds of death.
Yes, God bless the host for that show.
Yep,
bless his heart, so to speak. Fellow, here on the Pop Experience, this is my primary home. New episodes of lots of shows coming very soon. Like Johnny mentioned, making Mount Rushmore will be back. I believe the episode John is inferring to will be dropping on Monday, January 11th. And then there'll be another episode 2 weeks after that. Basically, every other Monday that show drops. Pop Goes the Classics, we just record our next two episodes. That is Peter Pan and Lady and the Tramp. So look for those coming very soon, as well as the new episode of Blockbuster Rewind will be coming out in a couple weeks. We will be covering the Shrek franchise with the Mud Pie. Logan Carlson will be our guest on that show. Not sure when Great Debate will return. Laugh and Theater will be back. We still are working on the next set of movies that we're going to watch, as well as looking forward, looking back. Also coming back, though, Pop Goes to the Couch had a great return. We covered the entire season of The Mandalorian, Season 2. And we are continuing on. We are going to be doing Cobra Kai. And that is...
Oh, my God.
That's going to be a little different, though, because Netflix is dumping all the episodes at once. But we are going to spread out over four pods, over 4 weeks. And that's going to lead us into WandaVision, which we'll be covering every week. And then after that, we have Falcon and Winter Soldier. Yeah, it could be many different people from Place to Be Nation. All the hosts are invited to come on that show whenever they'd like. So you could hear different voices. Who knows? You know, it's usually going to be me, Scott Shiflett, and Sean Kidd. Tim Capel has came in towards the back end. And your PIC, Mr. Rosero, who's actually caught up on our show. So we invited him as well on the season finale, Mandalorian. It was a tremendous show. Yes, we're going to be continuing that with all the great, you know, streaming shows that we see that have six, eight, ten episodes. Have a lot of fun. Pop Goes the Movies came back as well. Wonder Woman 1984. That was me, Tim, and Jenny.
We broke it down and gave our thoughts on the latest, the first really big new movie we've seen. You know, there was Mulan on Disney Plus, but you know, nothing really else besides that. Soul just came out. I haven't had a chance to watch that, but we'll see if we can get that one done as well. And also, PTBN Trivia Night is starting not long after you hear this. So if you're interested in being a contestant on that show, go to the Facebook page, go to the Place to Be Facebook group. You will see the description and the episodes. Let us know, let me know in the comments what episodes you may want to be a contestant on. We are putting everybody's name into a randomizer, and we will get our three contestants for each episode. And basically, you win an episode, you make it to the semifinals, you win semifinals, you make it to the final, and the winner will receive their very own custom championship belt. So we actually have a prize on the line, so we're hoping a lot of fun comes out, and we have lots of great games, and there will be different contestants every episode. So unlike Body Pressure Luck, we won't have a Ryan Everett situation where he wins every show, which was fun, but, you know, we wanted to see a little variety, I guess. You know, that guy is a tremendous, he's a monster when it comes to trivia, and he will be a contestant on an episode of PTBN Trivia Night, so we'll see how he does there. So, don't forget, check out all the feeds. That is the PlayStation Wrestling Network, the North-South Connection, and the Jenny Position as well. Oh, I also forgot to mention, I have a Wrestling Great Debate dropping very soon. Check that out, as well as the end of month Evolution with Tim Capel. We're talking about DDP. So, for Scott Criscolo, J.R. Sunil D'Amato, and Dr. G. George Ribolino, I am Andy Atz. Thank you for joining us on the Year in Pop 1987. We'll see you in 1988. And everybody, have a very happy new year. Enjoy 2021 and everything that we'll have to offer on all the feeds as part of Place to Be Nation and our associates. Take care, everybody. Have a great year.
Get Happy New Year.
Oh, God.